WKOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My name is Mike Hagan. You're listening to Radio Orbit. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Good evening, everybody. Hello. It's nice to be with you tonight. It's Mike Hagan. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. A big thank you right off the bat there to Debbie Johnson. My good friend Debbie every Monday night does a show called Free Range Radio Theater. An hour before this program, 10 p.m. every Monday night, wonderful radio theater coming to you here on KOPN. Thanks to Debbie Johnson. All right, great stuff as always from Debbie. Before that, Kelvin and Jason, Doing It Up, Jazz plus Blues equals Independence Radio. Tech Radio before that keeps us up on the fast-moving world of high technology. Jeff Wheeler starts things off every Monday, 3 to 5 p.m. with Uncommon Light. Good music, good talk, good news. Kickin' Radio on KOPN, your imagination station. Glad to be here with you all and a part of it. Thanks to everyone who joined me last week. Thanks for all the interesting and encouraging email regarding the things we talked about last week. I'm very glad that I decided to share it with you, and I'll be sure to let you know as things sort of develop with that. We'll probably talk with Richard Allen Miller a little bit about the whole silver mushroom experiment a little bit tonight as well. And thanks to everyone for your concern and your amazing insights and thoughtful responses. It's amazing to me, so thank you very much. Also, to the rock and roll band Ism for providing us with the tunes for the show last week. I really like those guys. If you missed the show, it's all on the web, www.mikehagan.com, in the program archives. Tonight, Richard Allen Miller, the wonderful Richard Allen Miller, backed by popular demand for sure. In just a few minutes, as a matter of fact, we're going to get things going right off the bat here with Richard. We'll also feature a number of different musical artists tonight. and try to honor the theme of American independence and the spirit of freedom. Started things off with my good friend Shannon Diaz performing as Sherelle C. Limes and the Lemons. We heard a song called A Toast to the Month of July, the Chinese dentist version. And I love Shannon, and she's a wonderful, talented young lady around town here, and a girl who is about as free as they come, if you know what I mean. All right, Shannon, I love you. Thanks so much for making the music. We'll share some other stuff from other people in just a little while. If you're interested in the music that I feature on the program, you can always find that as well on the website in the music archives. Just hop on the web, go to Mike Hagan, HAGAN.com, and snoop around in there. You can find everything that we're doing here, okay? All right, good stuff on the way, so hang in there with me. We'll play one more real quick one here. Let me get my ducks in a row. We'll come back with Richard Allen Miller in just a couple minutes. All right, it's Mike, and you'll listen to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia. If you want to get a leg up on Richard's material and get a little feel for what we'll be talking about tonight, you can surf on over to his website. It's nwbotanicals.com, Northwest Botanicals. You can find that in a search engine. You can link there directly from my site, or you can just type it in nwbotanicals.com or .org. I'm not sure. One of those two. We'll clarify that in just a second. But we'll be back with Richard in just a couple of minutes. And got a lot of wonderful, interesting things to talk about with him tonight, okay? All right. This is my friend Casey Rausch from Kansas City. And the song is called The U.S. Marine Corps. Back in just a minute, it's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit.
Before the Marine Corps knocked down my door.
U.S. Marine Corps. That's Casey Rausch from her CD entitled Casey Rausch and Friends. And this is Mike Hagan. You listen to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. All right, it's about 12 minutes or so, 13 minutes after the hour, 11 p.m., now on the 2nd of July, 2007. Amazing how the time is flying by us. And we're going to say hello in a quick fashion to our guest tonight. His name is Richard Allen Miller. He's been on the program before, and he's just a wonderful, informative, and interesting man. He has been at the forefront of many different fields over a very long and diverse career. He's a solid-state physicist who did work at MIT, groundbreaking work, as a matter of fact, that's only today, or these days, maybe I should say, being recognized for its importance and its relevance. And Richard has been involved in all kinds of different projects with different agencies of the government and in the private sector. And he's going to talk with us for as long as we can keep him on the air tonight. And without further delay, we will say hello and welcome back to Radio Orbit. Richard Miller.
Hi, thank you for having me back, Mike. It's
Richard,
my pleasure.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to have you. Thank you so much.
I wanted to say hi to Larry, you know, whom I met through you, who's my new webmaster. Apparently he's got a big house full of people over on Maui checking us out tonight.
Yeah, let's say hi to Larry, and I can correct my first mistake of the evening as well with your website address.
Oh, yeah, Larry's new website, yeah.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Yeah. I forgot, you actually, I'm sure Northwest Botanicals is still alive, but if you just go to Richard A. Miller.
No, Richard Allen.
Richard Allen, I'm sorry, Richard Allen, no, there it is right there, yes. Richard Allen, A-L-A-N, just one L, RichardAllenMiller.com, and that's Richard's sort of brand new and revivified website. It's beautiful, by the way. Larry's
doing
great work.
Well, he did yours too, so, you know, that's how it goes.
All right, well, anyway.
You look really cool. I like your picture.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
All right, well, everybody, it's RichardAllenMiller.com. You can catch up with what Richard is up to over there. Actually, it'll take you a couple of months, probably, if you want to go snooping through his website. There's so much information there, Richard. It's absolutely remarkable. Before we get lost, let's not, okay?
Stay focused. That's the Nick Begich rule, the radio rule of Nick Begich.
Oh, and
one subject per radio interview.
Well, with a guy like you, it's very difficult because
yeah,
there's so many different things
that
we're talking about.
He made
about,
the rule
so.
Up. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's start off with what's happened. We spoke at the end of April,
right.
And I've had a number of listeners and comments from the website and email and stuff that said, well, you know, let's see what Richard's been up to in the last 3 months. 3 months is a long time these days.
Well, I just returned from Sedona. I did an ESP workshop based on my work with Navy SEALs, and that book is in final draft. I'm trying to get it to Nick this week. It won't happen. It'll probably be early next week. Nick Begich will be publishing it under Earth Pulse News.
Okay.
It will be titled ESP Induction Through Forms of Self-Hypnosis. My my very good friend Chris, the husband of John, that runs the Night Watchman in your neck of the woods, did some serious editing for me and made his book better than I probably would have done it myself.
Great. What's the title of the book?
The ESP Induction Through Forms of Self-Hypnosis. What I did is I measured everybody when they first came into the class, and then I taught them the model that we developed for Navy SEALs, and then we measured them at the end of the day.
How do you measure?
ESP, standard card stuff, just like Dr. Ryan did.
Uh-huh.
You know,
we
just ABC, just run it through and test someone. You know, it's one thing for them to say they're psychic. We have to have a yardstick.
How? What were the results before and after?
Well, there's one guy that the average would have been 5, let's say in a given run, 5 would have been the average. Most of the people were getting 5 to 7. There'd be a 9 once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
Now this one guy's getting 15, 16,
mm-hmm.
like he's, you know, millions of times better in terms of guessing probability. Basically, the concept is that various altered states of consciousness, you can do things that you can't do in conscious states, that there is a reason why these other various states exist. How we classify them, you know, in terms of one state to another, originally was around brainwave pattern. We've gotten a little more sophisticated in hypnosis. There are 50 different physical phenomena, you know, from fluttering of eyes to blah, 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 anesthesia of the limbs, that are unique, that have allowed us to get a basic this is green and this is blue metaphor going, you know, in terms of what altered states are.
Right.
Once, and hypnosis, there's in a very narrow band, somewhere between 10 and 14 on the scale, extrasensory perception and a given person, the ability to guess, goes beyond statistical inference and then goes into the paranormal regions. Usually most people, when they center in, finding their own little spot right there, can improve their ability by 400 times using standard card tests. Amazing, isn't it?
That's remarkable.
Well, it means that other states probably are other things you can do. And at some place, these thought forms go into the physical reality and lead to my ultimate work, which will be on the non-local mind in a holographic universe. I think we're creating our own universe. I think that the reason we're all enjoying the current horror movie, Horror on Elm Street, is because, I mean, I don't know what else to call it, right? It's pretty awful. Bush, Iraq, you know, exploding cars. The whole thing is, is weird. And one has to wonder, at what level is it valid? And so how much of it are we creating ourselves? How can we change the movie? I've been exploring with foods and power tools, what we call power tools. They're like foods and brain drivers, virtual audio. I've sent you today.
Yeah, I read it.
Yeah, have you checked that out yet?
Yeah, yeah. Enough to get real interested.
Yeah, well, it's like high-tech physics now that had been previously used for mind control. What we're trying to do is now apply it toward the evolution of consciousness. That will be a second book that I get to Nick. The first one, the ESP book, has to go in this week. and then we have, good luck. And then I have a second book, which Nick flew me all the way up to Eagle River twice to get me into writing with him. And we did this book on power tools for the 21st century. This will be 8 chapters based on memes, you know, like you got your physical, emotional, intellectual levels of classifying various kinds of things. One chapter, The Quan of Air, deals with continuous breathing and virtual audio. And that's the chapter title. And another one is on an ontology of mystical states and sex magic. These are tools that can be used to change, literally change your reality, your experience, where you're working from in the brain. The whole idea is that the brain is a four-dimensional hologram of five space. That means that all possible realities are happening at one time, predicated on what part of the brain that you're viewing it from, your point of reference. And then in holographic systems, you talk about information and the resolution of information, the way you're going to scale it or measure it, physical, emotional, intellectual. And so there's 8 basic. I you know, I'm an old student of Leary's, and so I came from that perspective where.
What do you have? The 8 circuit
brain? Yeah, neurologic circuit.
Right.
That's correct. But his is more mechanized, and so what I did is I went to another level, but using same Fibonacci, you know, the whole thing about resonance and octaves. And the way we group information or experiences are basically 8 different ways. And, you know, got earth, air, fire, and water, you know, the standard alchemical process. But it's more metaphorical than even that. And that's where David Bohm's math comes really useful on different similarities and similar differences, the way you group experiences or information. You know, our concept of space and time is really kind of shaky now with our new models of dark matter and so on. And with that said, it's difficult to understand how to measure something when you're realizing that the yardstick you're using isn't real. Well, I mean, it's kind of like, what does this all mean? And I'm not sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it seems very strange to me because on the one hand, at least in my view, it appears, and there has been for quite some time, there's a crisis in science because for exactly that reason, because
I've got the words for that. You know what that is, that
what?
Crisis? It's the difference between discovery and results.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
You know, when I
yes,
was in physics,
yes, that's it.
It didn't matter what you were doing because it was about discovery.
Right, right.
Today, sciences are oriented toward results, which isn't really, in my opinion, science.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, that's what magic, in my opinion, is a higher form of physics, and it's more rigorous, and it's more precision, and actually trying to, like the Hopi, you know, everything is in metaphor. Sand paintings are solid-state
right.
physics devices.
Right.
Our explanation on how that works is, that's kind of like belief, you know?
Right, right,
yeah,
right.
Arbitrary.
That's, I'm fully with you. I think about all these different cultures and the way that they
yeah.
access information, and it's just described linguistically different in every different place, but essentially the result is, at least the goal is the same.
Well, that's the alchemical process. You know, you're starting to recognize the individuation of each item and the way it manifests in the physical world. And you have intellectual, emotional, you see what in physical.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's
mm-hmm.
food. Start with food. You gotta feed the engine. You know, the ATP, the
right.
things like that. Yeah.
And put the right food in.
Yeah, that's right. You are what you eat, and that has to do with thoughts. That's not food. Thought is a food, right? They called those cultural viruses at one time, you know, belief systems,
right?
Right,
right, right.
That will cause a breakdown in the system because blah, blah, blah.
Hey, let me ask you a question related to something you just said with regard to science. You mentioned magic and said that magic is more rigorous.
Yeah.
Maybe riff on this for a little bit. I always give scientists a hard time with regard to this idea that experimentation is time independent. Of course, experimentation isn't time independent. This is why magic is time independent.
Well, you know, in physics, we use an oscilloscope, which measures frequency and time, wavelength, amplitude, you know, those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, the master's thesis I did used a sampling, what was called a sampling scope from Tektronix. It was brand new. And you know, the rise times in electronics is, what, 10 to the minus 6 seconds. And this... I had a precision accuracy of 10 to the minus 9 seconds. You could measure nanometer. And what we were doing was event horizon studies, you know, in time, where we were able to move a particle 6.6 milliseconds into the future and then have a precision of accuracy of 10 to the minus 9 seconds.
In measuring it.
Where we're precision. But then
so
when
this
you
is
realize
actually, this is
you're
actually,
measuring time as an illusionary. I mean,
right. And this is a time travel.
Confusing.
But it's time travel experimentation, essentially, right?
Yes, that was my master's thesis. I was doing excitation emission to VK center luminescence, and that was considered by some of the first time experiments where we were, you know, moving. We had event horizons, precursor waves, where we knew something would happen at the other end of the crystal in nanometers, nanoseconds, you know, before it happened. I mean, we had precision on that. 6.6 milliseconds. Now imagine doing that at Wall Street, predicting in the future what's going to happen. I mean, you know, the application, the possibilities of, and I'm going to suggest that working from different places in the brain, you have that reality available. You have all of the possibilities available.
And it changes everything, though, obviously.
Well, it changes everything for what? You know, space that gets blown up and space that gets collapsed into singularities, like your quantum foam. Is that's where dark matter probably comes from, whatever that is.
Do you think that these effects that individuals are able to bring about are just local?
Or? Yeah, it's non-local. Your mind, literally, your mind, not mine, your mind,
mm-hmm.
literally, is everywhere in the universe at any given moment, and it's all simply connected. That means, from an imaginary point of view, because of the dimethyltryptamines and so on, you are going to be able to be the God you conceive God is. That means knowing all and being every point in the universe at any given moment. You have that possibility with just the brain as a four-dimensional hologram of five space.
Would you talk about Bell non-locality for a minute so people can understand a little
yeah,
bit more about this?
Your mind, you're localized in consciousness. You're inside your body. But And other altered states like astral projection or telepathy, where you move information to another place, or remote viewing, I mean, where you're literally somewhere else as well as where you are here, that's probably to some extent what Castaneda was trying to suggest within the concept of bilocation. It's a shamanistic thing, you know, of being in two places at one time where you're in your body, but you're also in the eye of the eagle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, bilocation. And that place is a different place in the brain, which is timeless. It's like it's not the same because time isn't measured the same way. It's more like a duration, you know, a duration of consciousness. It's like the way you wrap that memory protein with a handshake starting and ending, like this radio show started, okay. You know, when you played the music and then you talked about Richard Miller and then our conversation. That kind of thing is the way people remember things. They remember it in groupings of information pieces.
Well, and the idea of seriality, the idea that time has to be, events have to be sort of serialized.
Yeah, that's right. That's Robert Ornstein. That's him exactly. You know, you've got it. By George, I believe you've got it.
What happens when events no longer become serialized? I mean, then sort of history
ends.
Well,
they collapse into singularities and what we, just like in the comics, and then other realities take form, and you blow them up like you would a balloon, and they expand and become more real, or let's say, more resolution in the information, and that leveling of the one universe over another is all done with thought forms.
Talk about holograms for a minute, and because
sure.
this seems related, because I know that with a hologram, you can take any section of the hologram and you can get an image of the whole, but the smaller the section, the less
detail,
right.
Yeah, the resolution. Yeah, you lose resolution. That's the deal, see, and that's why, and it's like a continuum, like color is, but we grade it into sections like we do color. This is green, this is yellow, this is blue. And you know where it is. You know exactly where the one starts and the other one stops if you're an artist. And how does that work? It's the way we organize our bits of information as to whether it's emotional or intellectual or physical or something.
Mm-hmm.
And those memes set up in an alchemical system. So what I did on the Power Tools book is I oriented that toward 8 levels of the experience, you know, starting with food, and you have breathing, like doing a didgeridoo. You know, everything you do, like the importance of Tai Chi or jogging, is a critical thing in the functioning of the physical plane.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's the first thing you do, the last thing you do when you exit this universe is breathe. And, well, you know, so,
yeah.
You know, your part of your life has to be tied toward the development of that, like you do Tai Chi, controlled breath, or you do jogging, or you bicycle, or you do your 10,000 steps.
Mm-hmm.
Continuous breathing is a technique used with a didgeridoo that will take me to a different level in my body. And that's what we're trying to do with foods, sound, brain drivers, whatever, to go to a higher state of consciousness. And then the last chapter, of course, in the Power Tools book has to have an ontology of these mystical states, so you know where one is over the other.
Mm-hmm.
I use John Curtis Gowan.
Right. We've talked about him before. Yeah.
Right. And he's, in my mind, when you're not sure where something belongs, you know what I'm saying? That his system of classification is probably the most soundest one I've found in all the zillion years I've taught shamanism and whatever. You know, that's the one. And I use that to map my progress on where I think I am. Because there's different levels of cosmic consciousness. There's different heights of it. That's what they called the jhana states, the J-H-A-N-T-A, jhanta.
Mm-hmm.
There were 8 states of mystical awareness and, you know, samadhi. And they're different. And they have a different roadmap, or, you know.
Right.
Yeah. And so what I'm doing now is trying to map some of that inner space for you, inner space not. Well, it's like going into outer space or to Mars. There's places to go inside that are just as valid and real and have different realities available.
And that need to be mapped.
Well, I don't know about need to be, but it's sure exciting.
Or sure, yeah, or
the discovery part of what I was talking
right,
about.
Right, right.
Yeah.
In other words, certainly it would be, some people might consider that an advantage to have an idea what was going on when you were there.
Well,
you know?
That's the whole idea of
right.
it, to find out your your character and your calling. That's James Hillman. Hmm. You know, James Hillman's newest book is called The Soul's Code, In Search of Character and Calling. That's what we're after right now, trying to form dialogue, find out what our purpose is, our individual purpose. You know, each of us has a different thing that we have to do, and having to do with the sorrow and some of the other things that we go through, preparing us to do with a character that would be formed to be able to then do what our purpose was, our true will.
All
magic.
Right. Yeah.
I end up quoting Crowley no matter which way I go. I end up quoting him. I'm sorry. I don't mean to, but I...
You could quote less qualified people. I can guarantee that.
Aleister Crowley is someone that a lot of people don't really get.
Oh, he's gotten such a bad rap.
Yeah, it isn't about that. He was in a Victorian period. It was probably like Truman Capote. Mm. Slightly foppish, just a little bit, probably, with his voice talking a little bit twangy like that. And he was sarcastic. And, of course, back in the Victorian periods, the whole idea was to shock someone. So, of course, he had to be the first person to tattoo 666 across his forehead just to get a rush.
Right.
Well, it worked. I mean, every evilest man on earth. You know, and he wasn't evil at all. He was actually quite brilliant, and it should be mentioned that since recorded history, I mean, magic has always, until this last century, been reserved for the ultra elite of Europe.
Mm.
The ultra elite, because it was and all your scientists, all of them, participated. And the reason is because it is a science. It's,
right.
In fact, it's a way of being like the real people are. And that's what I have found so fascinating, is that my study with the Hopi and the real the Aborigines, they're like very similar in their rigor of the way, you know, someone in the tribe does this and someone else does that, and they have cross skills and their secondaries, you know, and all. And it's like it's a different way of living is what it is. And I'm finding it more interesting and with more world available to us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what the whole thing is. Your worldview gives you access to the world. And so you want to broaden your worldview and be able to take belief systems, which are arbitrary, and just change them like you would a pair of clothing.
Yeah, and I think that it's important to recognize that this is based on experience, what you're talking about.
Well,
rather than a book or something that somebody told you.
Yeah, you got to do it, of course. That's the whole deal.
Right.
You got to do the work.
Mm-hmm.
You got to walk the talk. Yeah.
Yeah, which isn't always easy.
No. Yeah. And, you know, that's what makes someone a master magician. Or Doctor Strange, you know, Master of the Mystery.
Right.
I always go back to my comics.
Oh man, I love it.
Yeah, cool.
All right, look. Before we take a break, I want to clarify a question that's come up from I can't even count how many people in the last 3 months. But we spoke relatively briefly last time we were on the air about the legal status of psilocybin containing mushrooms.
Sure, no problem.
Now, I got all kinds of flack, and everyone's telling me that I'm peddling.
It's all spelled out in the Uniform Controlled Substance Act. That's that. Basically, when it was getting formed in the early 70s, I was contacted.
This is the Uniform Controlled Substance Act we're talking about.
Right.
Okay.
Uh-huh. It was written in, I think, what was it, 72?
Early 70s, or I was going to say late. I've had people tell me
they started putting things on like heroin and cocaine and marijuana, but they started adding new things because designer drugs came out. You know, they had MDA. This is before Adam and Ecstasy, and there were things that Ibogaine, from Iboga. And,
sure, the African.
Okay. Right. And so there were lots of questions where FDA has no knowledge and no research done, and clinical papers are scampy, that kind of thing. And what you have to do is go back to some original studies with natives to see what was going on, that kind of thing. And sorcerer drugs, you know, those kinds of things.
Right, yeah.
Okay. Well, what happened was I was contacted by the Church of the Tree of Life out of California, the Bodic group, and they wanted me to write rituals for 28 herbs, which were called legal highs back then. And I did, which was the magical and ritual use of herbs. In fact, the original first edition of that book has publication in Class B from OTO, which the only person in history other than Crowley. Yeah.
Yeah, I have a copy of it.
Well,
I don't
have
a copy
of that edition?
One. I don't have the first edition.
Yeah,
wish
that's
I did.
The one that has the actual OTO approval in
right,
it. Is the first edition. That first edition sells.
Right, that's an expensive book.
Yeah,
if you can find
it's
it.
Because it's like a Crowley book. You
if
know?
You can find it, you can. It's very difficult.
Oh, there's some around. I've got some in my library. Blah blah blah. But
yeah,
you,
sure.
You know, there's it's around. It's not that big a deal. I mean, how many books are there?
Right.
No big deal.
Okay. Well. Okay. So and the fact
what
that you wrote
was,
that
when
book.
We wrote, yeah. When I wrote
how does
that,
how does that relate directly to the legal science?
Okay. When I wrote that, because rituals had been assigned to it, it automatically put the herb in a different category than a drug.
For religious freedom.
Like peyote. It was a ritual use of it. Mm-hmm. And as such, it was considered a sacrament. And because it was considered a sacrament, if you had a church that you formed around that sacrament, then you had legality on it. Now, psilocin and psilocybin chemistries so I had one on psilocybin, which is sex magic ritual or the mass of the Holy Ghost. There it is. Read it and weep. Okay, so with that done, it meant that growing it in your basement was legal, but selling it or selling an extraction was against the law. That was Uniform
right.
Controlled Substance Act.
Right.
And
right.
so, but they would, when they came in and raided you, they would see all these mushrooms being grown, and then they would say, well, this is intent for sale.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you had a religion or church that could account for that kind of sacrament being taken, there's nothing they can do.
Or if you can argue that that's the way that you use
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you eat that kind of thing, and you're doing experiments on monoatomic silver or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but you are legal to grow it as long as you do not sell it and or extract the chemistry.
All right, fair enough.
And that's really well spelled out in the Uniform Control. They'll try to fake you through that, but that's spelled out.
Okay, so it's a matter of understanding what's happening, knowing the law, and then just doing whatever you got to do.
Stick into your guns on it.
Okay. Wonderful. All right, Richard, thank you. Let's take a break, okay?
You bet.
Everybody, wonderful stuff. Richard Allen Miller, big-time information. I hope you appreciate it. It's important stuff, and we'll have more of it in just a few minutes. In the meantime, here's an appropriate one, I think. This is Marcy Playground. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. Happy Independence Day. July 4th coming in just 24 hours or so. Here's to it. This one's called Flag and Finger. Back in just a few minutes. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit. Marcy Playground, that's called Flag and Finger. It's Mike, you're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM, about 11:44 in the p.m. on the 2nd of July. Back in just 1 minute with Richard Allen Miller. Let me get a little piece of business taken care of here real fast, though. Program support for KOPN comes from a donation by Cherry Street Artisans, celebrating their 5th birthday on Friday, July 13th and Saturday, July 14th. The birthday bash will include live music from Noah Earle, our good friend, Noah Rutherford. Of course, that's Ruth and Jeff. Los Desterados, Chris, playing great harmonica. Gaynor and Friends, the Joe Willett Jazz Ensemble, and more. They'll be offering their full menu of coffee, espresso, food, and beverages. Information on Cherry Street Artisan is available online at cherrystreetartisan.com or at their location at the corner of 9th and Cherry in downtown Columbia. All right, let's get right back to them. Mr. Richard Allen Miller, and let's give the website out one more time, the same as his name, richardallenmiller.com. Hi, Richard.
Hi.
Thanks for sticking around.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Where are you at tonight? You're out.
I'm in Grants Pass, Oregon.
Yeah, okay.
I say kneecap Oregon. Nobody ever really knows much about Oregon. You know, we're about an hour from California border,
mm-hmm.
and you have to go through the redwoods to get to the beaches.
Wow, it's going to be amazing. Yeah, still got beautiful old-growth forests up there.
Oh, I've got a giant sequoia, some Douglas fir that are over 80 years old, and some others just in my yard here.
Wow, that's amazing.
Right on the river. Yeah, it's kind
of
cool.
Some of the old folks right there.
Well, we're, I don't know, but we got the clan.
Well, I'm talking about the trees.
Yeah, whoops. I didn't say that. Just kidding.
All right, let's move along here. All right, we talked about psilocybe or psilocybin mushrooms a little bit. Let's talk about cordyceps.
Sure.
And as if people never heard it before.
Okay. I have been in the herb trade for like 37 years, and I've watched them come and go each year. There's horny goat weed, you know, maca, echinacea, whatever. Each year they have the soup du jour, and some of them are pretty important, like echinacea and ginseng, mm-hmm. and some of them are a bunch of BS.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have never in my 37 years ever seen anything that affected me more profoundly than our cordyceps hybrid. Now, cordyceps is a mushroom that grows at about 16,000 feet in the Tibetan mountains in Tibet. It's
Does it only grow at those altitudes?
There's a variety that grows in Oregon at lower altitudes,
mm-hmm.
but that's again a special cultivar type of thing.
Right.
Most all of it came from Tibet.
Wow.
It's Cordyceps sinensis, and there's other species of it like Militans and Inatanus, and you know, they have a bunch of different species.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
genus is Cordyceps.
Okay.
Now, there's other pharmaceutical mushrooms. In fact, the literature's full of them with reishi, maitake,
mm-hmm.
agaricus, coriolis. The cordyceps, in my opinion, is the king of all of them in terms of polysaccharides and beta-glucans.
What's now, a polysaccharide and a beta-glucan?
Yeah, right. We'll go there. Okay, a polysaccharide is a huge sugar molecule with more than 100 oxygen bullets in it.
Holy
that means
cow.
That when the sugar breaks down, the oxygen is released into the body on a cellular level, and that essentially is cancers cannot exist in an high oxygen environment. Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the deal. How do you get oxygen into your body on a cellular level? Well, the Cordyceps sinensis, once it was hybridized, had like 5.5 times normal polysaccharides that were found in nature. And that's like, I mean, it's like it kills vampires and werewolves and does all kinds of things. It's like metaphor. It's I don't get sick anymore. Yeah. I have body parts wearing out, you know, because I'm an old, crusty old man. But but in terms of my health, I eat directly out of a can rather than taking pills. Mm-hmm. Nick Begich has capsulized it as Eighth Element on his website, mm-hmm. and I sell his product, which is a convenience thing for me. Like when I'm in a dead heat and I don't want to eat a bunch of sawdust because that's what it mm-hmm. tastes like, mm-hmm. I do it every morning. This is the nicest thing I'm going to do for myself every morning, you know, and I gag it down, and then I immediately have to go to the bathroom because mm-hmm. the runs, but purging and so on. But I don't get sick anymore. It's unbelievable. And when I say unbelievable, I mean, I don't get sick anymore.
How did you discover the benefits of the course?
I had a little girl die of leukemia in my home, and I lost everything. And I was, like, basically driven to try to find something that might have been able to help her during radiation and chemo. And she was 15 when she died. It was awful. And, I mean, it was like, you can't imagine anything worse for a mother.
No, I'm sorry, Richard.
Yeah, well, it's okay. I had good closings with her. So, you know, and I was driven to find, and that's when I started exploring pharmaceutical mushrooms and how they work. You know, the agaricus for ovarian and breast cancer. All of them have deep clinical studies. And it's only just recently the oncology clinics here in North America have done some kind of heads up. Basically, the way I can say it now, legally, is I can say that the United States right now is number 8 in cancer recovery. That means that there are 7 other countries in the world that have a higher recovery coefficient than the United States does for any form of cancer. Mm-hmm. And then I would quietly say, and why are 2 of those African countries that are riddled with AIDS and HIV?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I can say legally.
Right, and people can go investigate that further.
Well,
for themselves,
you know, like Michael Moore's sicko and his idea of taking people into Cuba, where they use these kinds of mushrooms as their primary treatments, why the government is coming down so heavily on him right now. What's that really about? You know, the reason that I have become seriously disenchanted with FDA and the pharmaceutical trade is that there is no intentionality for healing anyone. Hmm. For example, and I'll use this as a metaphor, everyone in the world has gut worms, you know, nematode in their gut.
Mm-hmm.
And we call that like H. pylori or some of these other indigestion things that in the United States they would offer Nexium and Prilosec.
Right, they treat that as cancer.
Huh?
They treat H. pylori as cancer, essentially.
Well, H. pylori is a little organism that you can kill with wormwood, and you go back a week later and kill the eggs.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do that, you don't get indigestion. And that's truly, but they would rather, the pharmaceutical trade would rather do a Mopar trip on us where recurring parts, where you have to take a prescription all the time. We had someone locally that was taking this, that was on dialysis and went off dialysis. What does that mean?
Hmm.
Well, it probably meant that the doctor put him on dialysis too early and the mushrooms were able to regulate his blood sugars. That's what they do. That's one thing I can say they do legally is that they absolutely regulate diabetes in terms of blood sugar swings. Anybody that has a blood sugar swing up and down by eating these mushrooms will reduce it to 1/4 what it normally would be. So you don't need to carry a sugar bar with you or whatever you're doing to pick yourself up in the afternoon or whatever.
And
these mushrooms are like eating oxygen.
Richard, this is still cordyceps we're talking about.
Yes,
right?
It is.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Cordyceps sinensis, HEAA hybrid. There's, per dollar spent, there is nothing in the world like that. There are a number of manufacturers now that are making their own hybrid form. I have one that I represent because I personally think it's the best one. But there are others in the universe now hybridizing just like you did
mm-hmm.
with your psilocybin mushroom, hybridizing using that same concept of hybridization. That's basically changing something into something that is more accessible to man, mm-hmm. like maize into corn as a metaphor.
Interesting. Let's talk about the hybridization that you did.
Sure.
How is snake venom or something involved in it?
Well, snake venom is a very simple chemistry.
What type of, does it matter what type of snake? Or what?
Yeah, no. Different kinds of snakes have slightly different kinds of venom, just like psilocybin mushroom has slightly different kinds of levels of psilocin, norovirus, biocystin, whatever, you know, in variations in chemistry. Yeah, certain snakes, we used diamondback rattler venom. There's a technical paper on my website that runs it down on precisely how the hybridization process works. The snake venom is, of course, completely broken down into chemistry.
What's the reason for the hybridization with snake venom?
Well, it's to create more polysaccharides than the plant would normally produce on its own. And what we were able to do is get a hybrid culture of mycelium that produced 5.4 times normal polysaccharides. And it's the same cost to produce it, so it's like better than a concentrate for the raw material price. Hmm. It's like a good deal.
And again, the polysaccharides are so valuable because they're oxygen rich.
Yeah. Now, there's lots of different kinds of polysaccharides because they come in all shapes and sizes. And that's why we call some of the work that we do full spectrum, because what we're doing is putting it all together, the baby and the bathwater. We don't know what does the deed, which polysaccharide, blah, blah, blah. And so what we would rather do is just give it entirely to you. Now, that's a belief system thing, too, in terms of, in Germany, they do what's called standardization extracts, where they have target chemistry. And in terms of cordyceps, it would be cordyceptin and cordyceptic acid. And those are the target chemistries that get extracted that you'll find on your pharmaceutical shelf. But I'm now finding that diabetes chemistries that would have been pulled out in the extraction somehow are symbiotic to the cancer chemistries of the beta-glucans, so that the combination of the two of them, that's probably why nature put it out there in the first place. I've got some arguments on that, you know, with Cascara and other things like that, but basically it's just, that's why what we do when we grow the mushroom, we give you the fruiting cap, the mycelium body, and the broth that it was grown in, because all three of them actually contain different polysaccharides and different beta-glucans. And by combining them all in a kind of a mother's soup type of thing, you know, we're targeting everything. And we feel that that's a better way to do it than target chemistry. We do the other, though. We do extractions, and we have some formulas that we put out specific for, let's say, Lyme's disease or HIV or for Hep C. Hepatitis C. But basically, I have found that just shoveling this cordyceps hybrid down is about as good as it gets, just on its own, without going into specialty formulas and all that kind of thing. If you just put this in your regular diet, like you do a roughage, you know, or fiber, you can, that alone will literally, my doctor that did a recent, you know, how old am I getting, you know, that kind of thing, because I got hair growing out of my ears, and it's awful, and I'm getting old now, and he says my vital signs are reversing, and that I might live to 120, just eating these mushrooms.
Wow.
Amazing.
All right, well.
I know that doesn't really tell you much about it. It's a very tiny mushroom. It you have to pick it with a tweezer.
Mm-hmm.
So we're growing it in laboratory conclaves, certified organic, where we have, you know, about 50,000 pounds a month production.
Wow, amazing. And you can obviously create conditions similar to those where it's grown in nature.
Well, yeah, we have pressure, you know, pressure and temperature control.
Right, right.
Yeah, because altitude is extremely important. One of the reasons it's real high in oxygen is, of course, it had to produce its own in the symbiotic thing because of how high up it is in altitude. That's one of the first things we were looking at, is the polysaccharides.
Hey, Richard, I don't normally do this, but I sort of have an intuition about this. The phone is ringing. You want to take a phone call?
Sure, let's go for it.
Somebody wants to talk, and normally if I don't tell them to call, it's usually probably important. So let me take this, okay?
Sure.
Good evening. This is Radio Orbit. Who's this?
Larry Norridge, you're calling from Maui.
Oh.
Hoping to get in.
Larry Norager. I think I'm familiar with him.
Told Michael I'd never do this. I have to get in right now because what happened was that Richard sent me a care package because I was found with prostate cancer, and my results have already come back positive, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I need to be able to verify exactly what these guys are talking about right now.
Well, if you want to ask Richard a direct question.
Yeah, no, hi, Larry. What's going on?
Oh, my gosh. You know, Michael and Richard, I'm so sorry to interrupt you guys, and I told Michael I'd never do this.
Yeah, well, you're repeating yourself, so you're having fun doing it. I can see that now.
I want to thank Richard so very, very much for sending me the care package.
Well, I told you I would.
You know, because and that's one of the reasons I've been hesitant to get more involved with Radio Orbit. I was found to have cancer, and I lost my father, my mother, and my wife in a period of 12 months, and I'm sure that's one of the reasons that my immune system had deteriorated because of stress.
Well, yeah, you got stress out levels going on. You know, each one of those gets so many points, and when you get up over a certain count,
mm-hmm.
you get sick. That's the rule, you know, stress management. Larry, your character is what's happening now. This, you know, when people die, and very close to us, it's how you handle it, which is, I'm just so pleased to see the character that you're exhibiting. I mean, it's an awful, awful series of things that have happened, and yet you're out there playing your music and doing your thing.
No doubt.
God bless you. Thank you so much. But I did want to acknowledge the fact that it has a dramatic effect on my life so far. I mean, the problem.
Well, you only used it a couple of days. You wait a couple of weeks. Check it out.
Well, Larry, that's what we have to do. We'll have to use you as a case study. I mean, there are a lot of people that are using this stuff and that are talking about it, and you're one, a person that we know and trust, and you're my brother, and I hope that it's exactly the results that you need. But I'm really interested in the future progress of it for sure.
Yeah, it's and really once you get what the sickness is about, like the dialogue between you and your higher self. Once you get that message, there won't be a need for the sickness. It'll just disappear
mm-hmm.
because that's all it's trying to do is get your attention.
Isn't that the truth? I think that's very, very true.
You know, and that's how we have to acknowledge it and not let it overcome us, but look and seek for friends that have the knowledge that Mike Hagan is giving us all, and Richard is producing actually for us all, and that's why I just had to call you guys and thank you so very much
cool,
for everything you do. Really, God,
you really got 15 people over at that house of yours right now.
Believes it. You know, nobody believes what's going on right now. My brother, especially, who had a very serious motor cycle accident several years ago, felt that he became incapacitated. Right, and he's sitting there listening to Richard Allen Miller, and he caught you guys, and I'm so proud of him, you know. I mean, he's right there with you.
Oh,
so
man.
Thank you so much for everything, and I'll get off of here because I promised I can't speak. I can't.
All right, Larry, it's top of the hour anyway, so that gives you an easy out, okay?
Take care, Larry.
You guys, very, very much. Thank you so much.
Take care, Larry. All right, everybody. Now, I didn't plan that, Richard. I had no idea that was going to be Larry. They're going to say, he had that plan. I didn't plan. Anyway, that's Larry Norager. He's, if you don't know who Larry is, he's the webmaster for my site and recently now for Richard as well. And he's the main force, I'm guessing, behind Richard's new look. So.
Yeah, his wife died 2 weeks ago.
This wonderful woman named Mitsuyo who's just an angel on earth for sure. And my heart goes out to Larry and the rest of his family, but he's an amazing guy.
Well, it looks like he's doing good.
Oh, he's going to come out of this thing, and he's going to really...
That James Hillman thing, In Search of Character Calling.
Mm. Well, he is all over it, and he's ready to just come blasting out of the tunnel. I can just feel it. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right, Richard, let's take another quick one, okay?
You betcha.
All right, everybody, it's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My guest is Richard Allen Miller. You can find him at the website of the same name, Richard Allen, A-L-A-N, Miller.com. You can link there directly from my site from here on out, as always. I have an earlier program in the archives that Richard and I did together back at the end of April. It's a wonderful program. If you're interested in what he's saying tonight, you can get a little bit more insight into what he's about. We talked about some interesting things back then in April, and we'll continue to do some more with Richard in just a little while here. In the meantime, let's play a piece of music. And let's see. What should we play here? Let's think of Larry. And Well, this one's for Mitsuyo and for Larry. It's by one of my favorite bands. They're called Devochka. And this one is called Queen of the Surface Street. It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN, Columbia, 89.5 FM.
Oh,
All right, that's Devochka. Wonderful song called Queen of the Surface Street. It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. Just about 7 minutes after the midnight hour, now on the 3rd of July, 2007. My guest is the wonderful Richard Allen Miller. He's with us from his home in Oregon, and we thank him for that, and we're going to get right back to him here. Hi, Richard.
Hi. That was a great tune.
Thank you. That's great stuff.
Yeah, that's
a band called Devochka. They're from the Boulder, Fort Collins area out there in Colorado.
Uh-huh.
Okay, look, we have been talking about hybridization and this sort of thing before the break, and you and me spoke a little bit off the air before the program, and of course we've been sort of chatting a little bit about this over the last couple months, but I've been working on this sort of experiment of my own that I spoke about on the air last week to my listeners, and I've been sort of keeping it under the close to my collar, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
Since I've been working on it, because I've been confused for one reason, but
well, that's easy for all of us.
You know, but at any rate, I decided that it was time to share it with people and see if I could get some insight from other folks and try to, you know, maybe further the idea along. So I'm going to share it with you real quick, and then maybe you give me some of your ideas and thoughts about it. Okay.
My expertise is in a different area, but yes, I'm familiar with this process. Enough that, and I've been doing it over enough years that I probably can help you.
Okay, so the first thing was about over the last couple of years, I've been very interested in the medicinal qualities of colloidal silver, but particularly with particular attention to the size of the particles, right?
Right.
And I've been sort of familiar with the medicinal qualities of silver for a long time. I actually used it many, many years ago with great effect to keep my dog alive, believe it or not.
Really?
And, yeah, this is my dog had cancer of he had a huge cancerous growth on one of his front paws, you know.
Right.
And he was quite old at the time. He was like 11 years old, and
that's significant,
I took him to the vet, and the veterinarian basically wanted to cut his foot off.
Oh.
And I said, "Well, that's not an option." And so believe it or not, that was the last time I ever took him to see a veterinarian. And he was 11 years old, and he died when he was 16. But,
that's amazing.
But for 5.5 more years, using colloidal silver that I made myself with this little generator that I bought, it was amazing. It literally stalled and maybe even reversed the growth of this tumor.
Technology,
you know?
That technology is not well known yet. Sir Lawrence Gardner, I presume that's who you were keying off of his work?
Not really, although I know he's very interested in this whole monoatomic business.
Right.
And I wasn't even sure. In fact, I was I've sort of talked down about the Ormus and all this stuff.
Well,
because I've never really seen anything to make me believe that it was anything special, but maybe that's exactly what we're dealing with here.
Well, they use gold, for example, with arthritis. They do injections,
mm-hmm,
and it works.
Mm-hmm,
so,
mm-hmm.
You know, there are applications out there. The problem is when you're dealing with gold and platinum, and it's like those are heavy metals.
Right.
And so when you get them in a monoatomic state or in your colloidal states where they're, you know, very fine string of molecules rather than clustering,
right.
They behave different, and we're only just now starting to research that with water,
mm-hmm.
for example.
Right.
That's another
right.
example
right.
of, you know, water has a bunch of different forms now that, you know, we've got sonoluminescence and the thing with Brown's gas and so on that we're now understanding that water and other kinds of elements, when they're in monoatomic form, where they're single-stringed or colloidal-string, that their laws of behavior in the body are different.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with all of that said, I also would raise a serious caution. For example, they did monoatomic iron. They were giving MRI users.
Right. Yes, you spoke about that on the air. Go ahead and tell that story again.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, what happened was that brain cells were being destroyed because it was the monoatomic iron, when it went through the cell, because in monoatomic states, it's at least 1,000 times smaller than the cell wall. So it's like a little meteor, let's say, going through the solar system,
mm-hmm.
here.
Mm-hmm.
And what was happening was that it disrupted the cross-chatter of a cell talking to itself, and the cell went into self-destruct.
Mm-hmm.
And that was brain cells. So it was, see, the whole idea was to enhance MRI imaging, and with iron. And what happened next was it started destroying brain cells. Now,
wow, okay.
Each element is different, and we haven't done enough studies to know precisely how they're going to behave in those states, because nobody's really looked
right.
at that yet.
That's really interesting that you say that, and I'll tell you why in just a moment, because it actually sort of creeps me out, but and I'll tell you why. But at any rate, let me just preface this with one more thing, okay?
Sure.
I had read a paper that was published in a peer-reviewed journal called the Journal of Nanobiotechnology.
I'm familiar with that.
Right, and the paper was written by a guy named Jose Miguel Yacaman, who's an engineer, a doctor of mathematics and engineering at University of Texas at Austin, right?
Okay, right.
And so he had done this, he was doing this work with nanoparticular silver, and the title of the paper was called Silver Nanoparticles Kill HIV.
And, that's interesting.
Yeah, and so, anyway, so I had this in the back of my mind, right? And I actually interviewed Dr. Yacaman, and we spoke, and I haven't been able to speak with him since I've been involved in all this stuff. Frankly, I think he's under pressure.
Of course, I hate to put it to you this way, but, you know, the Earth has got too many people on it.
Yeah.
And I think the first order of business for the New World Order is to reduce population. I think that's their first rule. I think that more than anything else, they have to reduce the total habitants. And because there's no such thing as war anymore. It's all business.
Yeah.
And with that said, what's Iraq going on there? And if they can't kill them with bombs, then they expose them to some terrible chemistry. They come home with half their brain or something. I'm trying to say is that there is a complete disregard for health because there's probably too many people on Earth.
Right.
China and India have got laws that aren't working, trying to reduce populations. And now, you know, you can't kid me. I mean, I don't think there's such a thing as war anymore. I think there's radicals, and they use that as an excuse to somehow reduce populations, of which there's, you know, the Earth has got a lot of people on it right now. And
right. Well, and we'll...
I mean, I hate to put it that way.
No, but I want to follow up on that a little bit further into the program, because I have some notes here about alternative energy and
sure.
some other things. Awesome. I mean, it seems like, to not lose track, it seems like in many cases, and I've said this before on the air, that if we really wanted to, I think we actually have all of the answers, all the tools that we need. What we haven't done really is change the way we think or the way we have...
Well, belief system.
That's
right. And, in fact, you're dead on that. And that's what's next for mankind, is the ability to take belief systems and use them as tools rather than
be
drivers.
Used by them as tools.
Used by them. Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right.
All right. Okay. So back to the silver thing, and I'll make this quick. So this whole thing was inspired by psilocybin use, actually, right? During one deep psilocybin experience, I had this insight that said, okay, now you need to try to hybridize the mushroom with the silver that you've been thinking about and using and stuff. So I thought, oh my God. And I began and I tried a bunch of different things, but it turns out that the silver kills everything, and it also kills spores. It kills spores of almost any mold or fungus or anything, right?
Well, that has to do with its conductivity and electromagnetic fields for certain kinds of cell structures and the radiation patterns they give off. That's called dosimetry.
Hmm.
And silver is an extremely good conductor, and so what you're doing is you're moving information across the cell, let's say, maybe faster than you might want to otherwise. You know, there's reasons why things happen the way they do, even on a submolecular or atomic level. And when you say that, the electromagnetic fields, there's like dialogues going on, you know, with ATP, adenosine triphosphate, these little chemistry things that are extremely important. I'd like to talk about ATP at some point too, because I've got some more insights on that that might be interesting. I don't know. It's just ATP is that enzyme, that it's a precursor that does all enzymic processes in the body. It is what everybody says is where you get your energy, the sparks, the enzymic or protein response. And you have to have it as a handshake on the front end and the back end. And every place in your body produces ATP, you know, including the brain. There's ATP being produced as these little engines. And it turns out that that engine is shaped like a vortex, exactly like a Schomburger vortex, which basically is creating a charged particle like water, for example, which has a dipole moment. It would be, if it went down a funnel, it's going to undergo an acceleration of that charge. And that is a weak force radiation called Bremen-Strahlen's radiation, or a plasma, and a plasma sheath is created. And it's the sheath, the rate of pitch on the vortex determines the heat of the plasma. And it turns out that the particular shape of ATP creates a very specific plasma called a quark gluon plasma. And that plasma never existed except at the very moment of the Big Bang. And that means or suggests that ATP is somehow involved with time and is like recreating the universe with this specific plasma, like it's a Brown's gas type of plasma. It forms this pinch, and in comes this plasma, and you have a little cold fusion process going on where I believe you're funneling matter from one universe to another. And that's why one universe collapses down into a singularity and others get blown up like a balloon. And it has to do with thought forms and your ability to focus, like with the different altered states. Now, your silvers would be extremely well suited in the metal series for conductivity of moving a charge from point A to point B. Okay. But in terms of electromagnetic, not just electric, I don't know. And magnetic. Silver has a magnetic quality, too. I think there's kind of a polarization thing that goes on with certain forms of silver, which will cause resonances in certain patterns.
Right.
And that's why, you know, people have been taking silver in their diet to get the way water, for example, metabolizes in their body. The silver makes a difference because of the conductivity thing. I don't understand any of this yet. There is a physicist in Finland, Alex Kavarainen, not Matti Pitkinen. It's Alex Kavarainen on the bike Cameron forms of water, and he's actually got some mathematics on how this all works, I think. Kind of interesting.
It's amazing. All right.
But we don't understand it yet.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I thought it was interesting when you said, you know, you got to be careful, and made the example of the iron that was used.
Well, that's just a metaphor. You know, it's like Madame Curie. We're dealing with things here now that are such that actually, if man evolves in this direction, we'll not need digestion or gut.
Right.
Well, it's not necessary. When you absorb monoatomic elements from the source, you can absorb them directly into the cell. You don't need to have to go through the gut. You know, the gut is not very efficient. I think only about 38% of our food is actually metabolized.
Yeah, very interesting. All right, so eventually I thought, well, okay, if the silver will kill spores, maybe it won't kill mycelium, right?
So, well, now, yes and no. It's like it took us in our hybridization process probably 2 years before we got it to work right.
Well, that's amazing because I got it to work right one time.
Yeah.
When it worked, it was, you know, I had actually eaten mushrooms.
You ate it.
Well, yeah.
This was
the deal. It was like
the
mushroom was the one that was inspiring this whole thing. And when I actually got a little half pint jar to actually colonize.
Yeah.
And you know, was fully, you know, non contamination. This is with no sterilization, nothing.
You know, you're a mad alchemist.
Right. And so anyway, I ate mushrooms as I began to fruit that particular little PF cake, and the only message of that particular mushroom experience was, okay, if that cake fruits, you eat whatever comes from it. And I basically made a commitment that I would, right? And I did, and I don't know what it did to me, if it did anything. All I know is that I've never been able to repeat it.
On Orbit Radio now. You're crazy on Orbit Radio.
Well, people think I'm nuts anyway, you know. So, Anyway, so this is what's been going on. And then I got frustrated because I haven't been able to repeat it. In fact, I got to the point where I was so paranoid. I thought that the company whose silver I was using was now changing their formula.
There's always the covert,
right. But I don't think that's it. I think I just did something right.
Actually, I have to say something. When I grew psilocybin, I found that some people doing precisely the same thing, some people made it happen and some people couldn't. It was almost as if there were little people that lived with that guy, but not that one. Well, I mean, there was no accounting on why it would work or not work. When we started growing psilocybin under Dr. Stuntz Cripes back in the early 70s. Mm-hmm. Paul Stamets, and there were a bunch of us that were in his class. Dr. Stuntz, we ended up hybridizing our own mushroom called Psilocybe stuntzii that we stuck in.
No way, really?
Yeah. It was after Dr. Stuntz, and it went into Wallingford. We, at the University of Washington, there was this big compost heap, and we inoculated it. And then, of course, it got spread through Wallingford. And the next picture shows all these hippies out in the early morning picking mushrooms in someone's, lawn. And it was great. It was the old 70s and the way it should have been.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That's wonderful, actually.
Yeah, that was a story from the university. That was under Dr. Stuntz, who taught mycology at the University of Washington. There were a group of us that took those early things, and that led me to write that one book I did called Magical Mushroom Handbook for High Times.
So the cover of it
has the hybrid of Dr. Stuntz. We call it Psilocybe stuntzii.
Well, that is so cool. Yeah. All right, well, look, what I'd like to do, I want to sort of close out this topic, but I'm going to write a pretty serious little paper about exactly what I did.
Yeah.
And then I'll share it with you, and then maybe we can talk further. Maybe somebody else can help us.
That are more knowledgeable than I that I'd like to forward it on. They might have some suggestions. It might not be rattlesnake venom. It might be toad venom.
Okay.
Well, you don't know. They're all similar in their structures.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, the bufotenes, the snake venoms, they're all similar in their chemical structures. That's why we use them, because they're real simple, and they break down simply. But you know what it really did, don't you? It made us be able to say we had a real snake oil.
That's right, a legitimate one, huh?
Well, I always liked the metaphor. I always liked that place.
Okay, well, you want to take a break?
Sure.
Yeah, let's take a break, and then we'll come back, and I want to talk about alchemy.
Sure.
All right?
Okay.
All right, cool. We'll be back in just a minute, everybody. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia. My guest is Richard Allen Miller. You can find out information about Richard and information about things that he's written and products that he has developed and has available at his website, all kinds of stuff there at www.richardallenmiller.com, and you can link there directly from my site as well, okay? All right, let's see. What are we going to play here? The 3rd of July. How about this one? This is from my friends Big Head Todd and the Monsters. Played a little bit of Colorado music earlier. We'll play a little bit more right now from Boulder/Denver, Colorado. Big Head Todd and the Monsters. This one's called Ellis Island. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia.
Yeah.
KOPN Columbia. That's Ellis Island. Big Head Todd and the Monsters, of course. Todd Park Moore, wonderful musician, guitarist, singer, songwriter, and the band from the Denver Boulder area. I go way back with those guys, back to the early 90s when they were playing the Denver club scene, and my friend Tom Flanagan actually managing that wonderful threesome these days. So great stuff, and I appreciate the music that they've been making for all these years. Big Head Todd and the Monsters, and play some more of them in the future, I guess. Or I should say, I hope. Okay, meanwhile, Richard Allen Miller, wonderful guest of ours, coming back to us from his place in Oregon, and say hello again. Hi, Richard.
Hi. Their music is just super.
Thank you so much.
Yeah,
I appreciate it.
Yeah, we're out here in Kneecap, Oregon, and there's just... We don't have anything like that. It's just really nice for Heads Up and all of that.
Yeah, I tell you what, put a link on your site. Tell Larry to put a link over to my music archives. And then,
okay, he will, yeah.
All right. Richard, let's talk about Alchemy. You have this amazing book. The last time we spoke, I had the copy of the book, The Modern Alchemist, but I hadn't read it. And, you know, I'm interested in all of this stuff, magic and alchemy and shamanism, and they're all sort of related. Maybe you could talk for as long as you'd like about alchemy and just riff on it a little bit, and maybe just start with a little definition of what the hell it is.
There's lots of different schools of alchemy, of course. Frater Albertus and Hans Netzel, that's how far back I go, out of Texas. Remember Frater Albertus?
I don't.
He was out of Utah.
Oh, Frater Albertus. Now I remember. Yes.
That's how old I am. I'm just dropping names. Mm-hmm. Hans Nitzel. I met him at an Acres USA conference one year, and he was pretty heavy-duty alchemist. Alchemy is a process like art. It's you don't really have a final product. It's like a process where it's, you know, like art isn't really a final piece like a painting. It's like the process of making that painting. That's what art is really about. It's path 25 on the Tree of Life.
Okay.
It is going from mastery of emotions to Christ consciousness or union with self. It's that connective line between the two, path 25. And it is for personal transformation is the particular form I aspire toward. You know, like magic, you got high magic and low magic, and you got living color, black and white magic, and then living color. It's, you know, high magic is the evolution of consciousness, you know, the union with self, the forming dialogue with your higher self, where you have this ongoing dialogue or communication. Some of that comes from having awareness. Some of it comes from transformation of brain states. You know, meditation will take you there, drugs, those kinds of things. Anything that would create an altered state, you can inhabit for a moment in your path going in and out of self. And it's a rich trove of personal growth. Anyway, The Modern Alchemist is a book that first Joel Radcliffe and I designed, and then when I met Iona, my ex-wife, she and I revisioned the book where it turns out there was this alchemist in the 14th century named Lamsbrink, German, that had the various steps or stages one had to go through for mastery of emotion. And that was called the Book of Lamsbrink, which later has been translated as The Modern Alchemist. What I did is I translated the old German into English, and then Joel rendered the original woodcuts, you know, the serpent binding and tail, those things, into pen and ink. And then Iona and I then added psychological commentary as a book of definitions, like what is negrito or union of opposites,
The albedo,
folly of negrito, you know, what these different processes that we go through and are going from here to there. And basically, what we found was that the 14th century Christian mystic forms were identical to the concepts that are used by Carl Jung. And so this was a book of definitions.
The Swiss depth psychologist, Carl Jung?
Yes.
Okay.
Uh-huh. That's what I write. It's on imaginal psychology or Jungian psychotherapy.
Right,
okay. And I'm mostly a James Hillman fan, which is third generation imaginal psychology. James Hillman, we've mentioned him earlier in the program, is the one that has written Anima Animus, Imaginal Psychology. That's the other titles of his books would be, 100 Years of Psychotherapy and Things Are Getting Worse. And now his latest book, The Soul's Code, In Search of Character and Calling. Yeah, Hillman is great.
I wonder if he'd come on the program. I should try to get a hold of him.
He's older and... he would be. I would die to have.
All right, I'll try, okay?
Yeah, he would be out of Spring Publishing out of Dallas. That's how you start up that movement. And whom you really like would be Jeffrey Satinover, who's a physicist, a medical doctor, and a psychologist, all three.
Wow.
And it's Jungian psychotherapy. Satinover has written some books on physics, like the quantum universe and things like that, like Nick Herbert.
I like Nick Herbert's work. Yeah.
Well, he's... Yeah, a little dated, but Nick Herbert clearly saw things, you know, way before other people did.
Mm-hmm.
And Jungian psychotherapy, I remember there's an interview where they interviewed Carl Jung and they asked him what it was like to be on the shoulders of a great man, you know, Sigmund Freud.
Right.
And the way the commentary went is, well, Carl looked down and said, well, one can see much further from up here. You know, just great eye. But basically, he's the one that would suggest that there are archetypal encounters. Now, Inner Traditions, which is the largest publisher in the world now that does my Magical and Ritual Youth Series, mm-hmm. has expressed interest in reprinting The Modern Alchemist, but only as a cornerstone book, where I, you know, come in with some other things. What I've shown them, the next book in the series, which is called Pantheon, Archetypal Gods in Daily Living, and guess what? There's 22 chapters, just like the Book of Tarot.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's Jungian again, which would suggest that we're all involved in some kind of mythology where we're either possessed, you know, a single archetype, or complex, multiple archetypes. And what the key is to identify what myth you're currently enacting. And if you don't like the ending, well, you can change the myth by going to a different mythology. And it's a way of, you know, like 22 stories in the big city. There's Psyche at the Well. And I chose Greek pantheons because they're more human than, like, Egyptian.
Right.
They're more primitive. You know, the Egyptian ones deal with more deeper parts of ourselves. Now, in The Modern Alchemist, it actually has two sections to it, where the first section has to do with the animalistic nature of man. You know, the dog and the wolf, the stag and the unicorn, soul and spirit within matter. And it progresses with different kinds of animals, of the serpent biting its tail,
the
salamander in the fire, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, then the second part of the book jumps and becomes more human, where it's now about the father and the son
mm-hmm.
and the angel,
mm-hmm.
and where the father consumes the son and gets sick, and then all three meet on the mount as in union. That's the mythology of personal transformation. We have various steps, and they start with the more primitive forms of, you know, savage and you're human. You know, the way I would put it in a more current text form would be to say you have voice of coyote and voice of reason. And voice of reason holds you into your belief systems and you're nice and secure and there's no personal growth. And voice of coyote is what makes you step out of the box for a moment, have doubt or fear, and that discomfort causes you to change.
Mm-hmm.
And that alchemical process of the dialogue between voice of coyote and voice of reason is the inner dialogue that you need to form, because both are critical for any kind of personal transformation or growth. And if, you know, for me, what I seek is spirituality. You know, not so much what you do, but how you do it, the
mm-hmm.
quality
mm-hmm.
in which you go about your personal belief. That is where the richness of life and the timelessness of what we call sacred time comes in over profane. You know, it's that place of numinous where it's timeless. You know, like when you're making love to a woman, there is a moment there where it has nothing to do with time. It has something to do with timelessness. And that place is the center of what we all seek in our path.
Right. Wow. And so the idea of a personal alchemical transformation then is to find this place.
That's everybody's unique, and what you need to do is find your own language, your own song, your own way of relating to yourself. Each, like biofeedback, everybody's got their own mind's eye in the way they approach this dialogue with themselves. It's unique, and that's what the first cause of exploration is about, is to discover yourself.
Discover thyself.
Yeah. That once you have that, that's only halfway to God. Well, it's a long ways up there, and I need a helicopter.
Yeah, still a long way to go after that, huh?
Yeah.
All right, well...
Alchemy.
What about... You mentioned toward the beginning of our talk on alchemy about the idea that there was really... that it was more of a process and not really a matter
of...
A result.
Simon says, you can go halfway to the door. And if Simon continually said that for the rest of his life, you would never get to the door. It isn't about getting to the door.
What about people who are asking about the Philosopher's Stone, and that was this not the goal?
Okay, many different metaphors of that. Again, that's your resolution of the hologram. You know, from the white eagle and the red lion, you know, where the menstruum and semen meet, and there's a rare protein change that is a Eucharist you have to consume. It's... That's all Buddhism and tantric yoga and the sex magic, orientation, then there's, again, it's all on metaphor about thought forms and how you manifest them from your mind's eye into the physical reality and how you make it from here to there. And that has to do with altered states of consciousness, like the drug experiences and hypnosis and all the different forms that we have, to be able to go from an idea in your mind's eye to making it literal on the physical plane. And we're doing that at any given moment, all of us.
Right.
We don't know it.
Right.
And that's because a lot of our belief systems were and values were given to us at early ages in childhood, puberty, that are no longer valid for our universe now. Yet, if I don't get my way, I'm going to kick and scream, because I know that if I kick and scream, that people will give in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you learn these things, they're not valid anymore, you know, and you need to be able to witness them. And in order to do that, you know, when your behavior, you have to be able to step back and watch yourself. And the way you do that is through meditation and brain drivers, you know, where you start to actually work from a different place in the brain. You can watch your behaviors and see that they're not working and be able to reach in surgically and remove them like you would a pair of clothing that no longer fits.
Wonderful. All right, what about... okay, two things here, but before I ask about the Holy Grail...
Yeah, which one?
Yeah, really.
No, just kidding.
A question comes out about that. What about the Holy Grail? Let's ask that now and then, but so I don't forget, make a note or a mental note or a physical one that I want to ask you about culture and how culture plays into this
mythology. And the way urban myths become legend and the way legends then become our mythology, and then the rituals are used to celebrate the myth by enacting the myth through a ritual format of some kind, colored lamps, you know, blah, 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 mumbling something about Jupiter or whatever. You know, I mean, it's what rituals are these little things that we do, like in the morning, you know, when you boot up, you're going to the bathroom and then you squeeze your toothpaste and you got to get your toothpaste on the toothbrush before the bathroom toilet clears. You know, these little games that you play with each other. That is what determines your personality and who you're going to be that day. And as simple as changing those changes the day. Ritual, that's the alchemical process, and it works on all different levels, from foods to sound, like the music you're playing, what you're looking at, what you're hearing, what you're sensing, and what you allow in through your filters. Because your filters are filtering out all kinds of extraneous things you don't think are important.
Right.
And they're just as part of the reality as anything else is.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're doing is you're moving in certain directions with intentionality. And maybe it's not the right way you want to go.
And much of that is culturally defined, wouldn't you say?
Well, that's right. You know, the mom has an argument with dad, and you come out of the womb with an attitude. Well, that's how it works.
Right. Literally.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. The Holy Grail. What is it?
The Holy Grail has meaning to people on many different levels. It is the search for self.
Mm.
That's what Arthur and Merlin and T.H. White wrote about that. It was Merlin.
So all these things are about the self. In other words, everyone's out there looking for the grail to save the world or something.
Union with the higher self. This is the first principle of magic, as Crowley taught it, is to do thy true will, to discover your true will, not free will. I have a whole chapter in my book on the nature of free will, because that part, it gets very confusing when you realize that Dylan's song probably sums it up best when he says, everybody's got to serve somebody. And, you know, you go into the old Bibles, the ones I did, the Torah, for example, talks about the difference between Yahweh and Yod-Heh-Vah-Heh. And then, you know, God. And then there's this hierarchy above God called the Veils of Isis, of Ain, Ein Sof, and Ein Sof Ur, implying there's a hierarchy of gods in the original Bibles. And just like there's a hierarchy of awareness in man and things like that. You know, we're not that aware. Well, we're not.
Right.
You know, if you chose to see the earth as in metaphor, where the gods are out here on the rim doing biological experiments, it's probably not about man. It's probably about cetacean. It's probably about the whale. There are at least five or six different whales that, you know, starting with orca and the dolphin,
mm-hmm.
and the pilot whale and so on, that have bigger brains.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah, the sperm whales,
in some ways,
yeah.
have higher technologies. Orca has a cerebral cortex that's twice the size of man. He's firing 60% of it.
Mm-hmm.
You want to know who God is? It's
mm-hmm.
probably Orca, not our God necessarily,
mm-hmm.
but certainly the prime experiment on this water planet.
What do you make of their relationship to man and what we're and the effect that we're doing,
you know,
on the environment?
I think we're kind of like dogs.
Huh.
Well, let me explain. I have had the very wonderful fortune of actually spending time with dolphin in tanks. I first was in the John Lilly labs for Carl Sagan, and then I got to go to Dolphins Plus, which was a rehab center out of
mm-hmm.
Key Largo.
Mm-hmm. In Florida, yeah.
Yeah, that you know, they found that when they took damaged children, you know, children that had been abused or had mentally retarded or whatever,
mm-hmm.
that there was a symbiosis that occurred between the healing ratio of the dolphin and the children.
Mm-hmm.
And both of them increased when they were in dialogue with each other in the tanks, playing with each other. You know, I don't know, but what dolphin are probably one of our best friends.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, literally speaking, they're like an orca is the king of everything. I mean, you know, it's like the dolphin's form, clicks and whistles is like a form of Clifford algebra, dimensional math.
Mm-hmm.
Their redundancy just in transferring information is 10 times more efficient than Hebrew.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you realize on the internet now, there's some stuff you can look up on Google where the dolphin are blowing bubbles into art forms. That's
yeah,
their form
yeah,
of art.
Yeah, yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah, yeah. But guess what? Those bubbles they're blowing is sonoluminescence that they're reproducing at MIT now, which is a form of cold fusion. And that means that the dolphin's art is cold fusion.
It's cold fusion.
Like the movie The Abyss.
Oh, my God, that's amazing. Because, yeah, I've seen them. They actually can create, like, these vortices and
right,
all kinds
where
of things.
They do a complex of little bubbles.
Mm-hmm.
Those bubbles are called sonoluminescence,
mm-hmm.
where when the bubble pops, it produces a light that's brighter than the energy inside the bubble.
Oh, man. You know,
that's
Richard,
sonoluminescence.
You know, Larry's out there in Hawaii, and
he's got access to some
yeah,
of this
well,
stuff right there.
You know, there's a guy and a girl out there that are friends of mine who have been on the program a number of
that
times.
They're doing dolphin rehab?
Yeah, his name is Michael Heisen. And he worked with John Lilly, too, and he's a genius, and he worked for NASA, and he's done all the whole... He's
well,
a lot like
dolphin
you, actually.
Thing, that dolphin connection, I have to tell you, when I was in the tank, I was in with three dolphins for more than 4 hours,
mm-hmm.
and they did things with me. You know, they pulled me with their fins,
mm-hmm.
and without any of the trainer saying anything, Cosmo, the one dolphin, knew that my left arm isn't real. I don't have any bone from my wrist up past my elbow. It's all a composite from
mm-hmm.
an old chainsaw accident. Don't ask. And don't ask. Don't even go there. But the dolphin knew that. Now, that's from sonar or whatever.
Right, right.
But it knew that to the point where when I put my arm out for it to grab it, it did it differently than the other dolphin did. Cosmo was able to figure it all out and pull me differently. And he looked at me. And when he did, it was like I was in the presence of an extraterrestrial.
Mm-hmm.
I literally felt humbled by the experience of just eyeball to eyeball, that thing called darshan. I have had darshan with my teachers, you know, in India and so on, and this thing was significant. It was like I felt I was in the presence of something far more intelligent than me,
mm-hmm.
and that's exciting.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I've been in the water with dolphins before in the wild, actually, when I was in Australia. I like to scuba dive.
Oh.
And, man, I had an amazing experience.
Yeah, they play with you, and
oh
they're curious like we are, and
oh.
they're sense of humor is, you know, I mean, they're smart.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm really smart. I mean, really, really
like,
smart.
Really smart, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, like maybe smarter than we
and
are.
And maybe telepathic, you know, maybe telepathic.
Well,
or
we
able
have
to...
communication systems in our brain, the frontal lobes, which is synthetic telepathy that I discovered for Navy. And, you know, there's other kinds of forms of communication that we call extrasensory, which are dealing with microwave or, you know, bandwidths that we're not aware of, even though that's one of the reasons why I think we have the non-local mind. There's more going on than consciousness.
Right.
And that's the part that we all want to do is figure out a way to integrate it.
Let me ask you a question that just sort of popped into my mind here. Do you think that DNA changes are undergoing, are being undergone among certain individuals or people?
You know, it was embryonic holography where I suggested that the DNA was a three-dimensional hologram of force space. You know, who
like
you
the
were,
mind is a four-dimensional
who you are, and who you will be. It had a time element in it. Okay, you know, it like knows who you're going to become, that kind of thing. Okay, well, the brain then is even higher ordered. You know, because that's your antenna.
Right.
And then on top of the antenna, you have this big crystal we'll call the brain, which has got amorphous semiconductors, liquid crystals that are moving around on a regular basis in dialogue with Schumann's resonance and other kinds of frequency bands going on with the Earth that cause what I would say five space. In other words, four dimensions. It's a four-dimensional hologram. It's constantly changing, so it's got four different elements to it that creates five space. And, you know, that means you can change the movie. Change how you experience time, timelessness, past lives, whatever place you want to go.
What do you think junk DNA is?
I don't
so-called junk DNA. It
yeah,
sounds silly
I don't
to me,
have but... a bunch of knowledge on that yet. Mm-hmm. I think it's DNA that has some missing code to it, or lesser of the hologram, then. How's that one sound? And that someone with an extra strain in their DNA has higher resolution.
What about the people say that it's not junk at all, it's just people don't know enough about it?
Well, I think that's more likely. Just like monoatomic. I don't know these fields. They're outside my own range. I have opinions, but, you know, that changes daily.
Right.
So, well, I mean, you know.
Yeah, okay. All right, let's see here.
I know you're speechless. That's okay.
I am at times, actually, with some of the
no,
stuff.
No, I'm like this encyclopedia. No big deal.
It is amazing. I mean, the you know, I'm thinking more about this whole business with the cetacea. And they that really is a big deal.
Pilot whale. Yeah. There's all of them in there, manatee. They're all exhibiting extra-normal awareness. And when I say extra-normal awareness, you know, ants and bees have a collective hive consciousness. But this is like individuation. It's like uniqueness and awareness with intensity of intention. There's purpose and there's goals and it passes the Turing test of awareness. You know, I mean, it's like we can't think of ourselves as unique because, in fact, it's all around us.
Right.
Even the soil.
Oh gosh.
You know, as Michael Reisia with his plant organism, you got your viruses and your myceliums, and all of this forms an aggregate collection of consciousness and the way information is moved from one point in the soil to another. That's what defines habitats. And habitats have a kind of awareness, like Chicago has a different awareness than New York
does. San Francisco, yeah.
Yeah, they're unique because of the way they're laid out and their structure, their physical structure. And there it is in metaphor. And so I'm going to suggest, as above, so below, you know, the Hermes thing, that idea that the universe is inside us and outside us, and whether we go outside in our exploration or inside, it actually is all the same.
That's interesting. We sort of come full circle because we started talking about alchemy, and now you mentioned Hermes, and the Hermetic Code, of course, is some of the early work of this.
Right.
Or at least some of the earliest that we know of.
Well, you know, Greek.
Right. Hey, what about the Chinese and alchemy?
Chinese alchemy was more legerdemain. In Hangzhou, form of what they call kung fu. Kung fu, by the way, means excellence. It's not, you could have kung fu as a ballet dancer.
Right.
It's
a quality of something.
Okay, the Qigong, the idea of the alchemical part, was a sleight of hand where you created an illusion to another person. We do this in tennis. It's called eating his brain. You know, when you're going to go out on the tennis court and you've already beaten him before you even get to the tennis court?
Uh-huh.
Right. That's the alchemical part of the battle that I understood when I took Hung Gao. I studied Hung Gao, which is called dragon form. And that's a Shaolin form. And basically, the alchemical part, the sleight of hand, was like more like Le Germain, where you created an illusion where the enemy was battling himself, not me.
Okay.
It was a type of reflective energy, you know, like, you know, I'm going to do white light around me and everything you do at me is going to reflect back at you threefold, you know, because of reflection. That's, you know, where that threefold thing comes from is squared amplitudes. That's an optical thing that got turned into witchcraft. But really, it's that, you know, when you reflect a wave off a surface, the amplitude changes by the R squared.
Yeah.
That's why they say it's going to be reflected back to you threefold.
Okay.
And that alchemical thing, what the Chinese did was in their movements would try to do a secondary level of movement that created an illusion of a different universe. And then the person was battling himself. That's like in Star Wars. You know, or the Bene Gesserit with their voice, you know, where they manipulate your sound by, you know, rolling down in the throat, like neurolinguistics
right.
or something.
Right. All right. Okay. Look, it is, it's 11 o'clock your time. And
we can do another one.
Let's do one more, okay? I've got a bunch more to
ask
you.
Yeah, I know.
And,
that's fine.
There's a whole lot going on. So, all right, great. Take a break. We got about 4.5 minutes or so, okay? And we'll come back and talk a little bit more, all right?
You betcha.
All right, everybody, it's Richard Allen Miller on the web at richardallenmiller.com. We've had the good fortune and pleasure to get to talk with Rick for the last hour and 45 minutes or so. We'll get another hour with him and come back and do that in just a few minutes, all right? In the meantime, I've got sort of a Colorado theme going tonight. I don't know why, but here's another one. This is a band called Canal. The song is called Time. And we'll be back with Rick Miller in just a few minutes. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, on the web, KOPN.org, and Mike Hagan, HAGAN.com.
People come and then they go, and that's just the way it goes. Listen to what we know. Like water we shall flow back to the ocean, so in the body of the Lord, welcome home. Time to reap what you sow. Time is overwhelming me. I just hope there's time for everything. La 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 love, yeah, time is overwhelming me. And I hope there's time for everything. Why do you want to fight? You separate the wrong from right. That's the enemy. Why don't you choose to see the better way, when work becomes your play? Hey, come look inside, unveil where you hide. Time is overwhelming. I just hope there's time for everything. Time is overwhelming me. And I hope there's time for everything. was hope this time for everything. Ooh, la 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 la, the time is overwhelming me. And I hope this time for everything. I just hope this time for everything. Yeah, I just hope this time for everything. I just hope this time for everything. I just hope.
Now, that song is called Time, and it is about that time to say hello again to Richard Allen Miller on Radio Orbit with Mike Hagan. That's me, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM, and here he is once again, the man himself, Richard Allen Miller. Hi, Rick.
Hi.
Well, lots of questions that are coming up about sort of, well, a couple of things. Energy, first of all. There's... You know, we're fighting over oil. We're fighting for who knows what, really. As you mentioned earlier in the program, really with no reason anymore.
That's right.
So,
there's, in terms of syn fuels, which, you know, they're the yellow corn connection, we did studies 40 years ago with comfrey and Jerusalem artichoke and
ova bean. What's comfrey?
Comfrey is a broadleaf plant symphytum.
Okay.
Yeah,
it's another plant that they can use for...
Yeah,
for
the biomass yields on it are so incredible. Like, on a given alfalfa field, if you got, what, 4 cuttings, you'd get 8 cuttings with comfrey. And the biomass yield would be upwards of maybe 10,000 pounds per acre, wet biomass. It has a taproot that starts at 18 feet, which means it's going into... sea horizon bedrock, you know, going in, making minerals.
That's really good for the soil, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and comfrey is a plant that probably could fuel us for the rest of our, you know, the rest of Earth's history.
Right.
If we wanted to go in that direction with fuel.
Right, and we knew this decades ago.
Yes. Not decades, way beyond, 30, 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Corn was obviously not as interesting because it depletes the soils. It's really hard on soils, and really what you want is a biomass yielder that is same old, and sustainable, where it doesn't require a lot of nutrient additives to build the soil back up after you've depleted it.
How does hemp measure up with some of these other ones?
Hemp is low on the list. It's one of them that got looked at in the 70s. We looked at that. We looked at several things like that, flax, other kinds of things. Actually, it was comfrey that came out, mm-hmm. the big one.
Wow.
There's several
Isn't that amazing? That's one that nobody ever even hears about.
Comfrey?
Yeah.
Well, they've made it illegal in Canada. You know, I did a study with comfrey. Yeah, I know. Canada is going just like the U.S., only faster in some ways. There are laws in it. You know, the root has pyrrolizine alkaloids, oxalic acid, and... if you don't cut the plant, then what becomes the root is part of the upper aerial part of the plant, because the root and the leaf, there's a little point there where it's leaf and now it's root type of thing.
Huh.
At comfrey, if you understand the plant, you'll know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Just goes from one to the other, and if you don't cut the plant, if you don't cut alfalfa, you lose your proteins. Well, if you don't cut comfrey, you get more pyrrolizine alkaloids going up into the leaf. And the studies that Canada did, they never cut the leaf.
Huh.
And they said the whole thing was poisonous, when in fact, when you combine comfrey with alfalfa, it constitutes like a whole food for cows. Because it has lysine and alanine, which are missing amino acids in alfalfa. And when combined with alfalfa, I mean, that's a whole food for the cow. You throw in a little bit of yucca for its methane production in the gut, and you're good to go with feedlots.
Huh.
We were using it for feedlots. Right now, the mushroom we talked about earlier, cordyceps, is being used. The hybrid form of cordyceps is being used in feedlots with transfer factor as an antibiotic substitute.
Wow, that's
working
wonderful.
Better.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, transfer factor will be the next major move in the pharmaceutical trade when they join that with you know, transfer factor comes from colostrum, you know, women's milk. It's that little, and transfer factor is that enzyme that sits on top of a cell looking for specific things to kill, like measles or mumps.
Mm-hmm.
That's why your mother, when she breastfeeds you, you pick up natural immunity from her. You're picking up the transfer factor from her milk in the first day of lactation. The baby takes in, that's usually when it gets all the transfer factor that it needs.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're doing now is we're adding transfer factor to the polysaccharides, and we've got a full-spectrum antibiotic.
Can it be synthesized?
What?
Transfer factor? Yeah.
Not at this point.
No.
No, they primarily extract it from the colostrum in milk cows, it's all the same. And yes, probably someday they will.
Right.
But at this point, it's an enzyme, and it's not that easy to do.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I didn't mean to diverge on fuels, because in terms of fossil fuels, oh, man, the Earth has got enough fossil fuels in the seabeds with these methanes and other things we could last for another century or something. We'll still have the problem of global warming and all that's related to the burning of fossil fuels, but that technology, there will never be a shortage. So these hikes on gasoline prices,
right, it's just all hype,
that's all orchestrated because, you know, what their argument is that we're not allowed to build any new refineries on the West Coast, and so the East Coast, when it goes through Katrina or something like that, it creates a hardship on the processing of oil, which it isn't. And what happens next is inflation of the gasoline prices, which is all imaginary. It's not real.
Yeah, I mean, it's an absolute theatrical.
Well, every year the government comes up with some new way to bilk the have-nots. You know, for example, one year it was savings and loans, and everybody was going to go to jail and nothing happened. And then another year it was the heating oil in California, and they found they were ripping everybody off, but nobody did anything about it.
Right.
And now it's gasoline prices, and that's all illusionary. And it's manipulative on the New World Order, and again, it all comes down to too many people on Earth, and how do we cut them back?
Mm.
And it's, I think, this century is going to be seen as probably the darkest in man's history in terms of the way we're treating ourselves. You know, like war to eliminate breeders. That's all they're sending over there to Iraq, or our breeders, the people that would have lots of babies. And if they can't kill them off with a bomb, then they accidentally expose them to some nerve gas or whatever.
Right, or depleted uranium or this or that.
Whatever, you know, it's something that will happen that would then cause, you know, when you put it like, the way I say it to Nick sometimes is that, well, if you know that 9/11 didn't happen really the way they said, because you can see the explosions as the building's coming down, and you know that an airplane never hit the Pentagon, and you're pretty sure that Bush didn't win the election in Florida, then you can probably say, well, it looks like our mind control experiments are all working, because nobody cares.
That's next on my list here, is mind control, and I was going to ask, let's wait. Let's continue with energy just a little bit and tie these things together. But let me ask you about the oil paradigm altogether. In other words, getting away from burning.
It requires all kinds of weird processing, and it has byproducts that are harmful to the environment. Why would we even dream of continuing with something like that? You know, solar and wind and tidal changes on the seawater, I mean, those are places that would make sense to me, not nuclear energy where you're running fusion to create power like a controlled exploding bomb.
Right, and creating a waste that you still don't know what the hell to do.
And you have byproducts. You have the radioactive waste afterwards. What are you going to do with all that? Well, we'll get rid of it with our cold fusion processes next century when we invent them. And, you know, that's kind of like the Mongols going after the almighty dollar and letting their kids worry about how they're going to do cleanup.
Right, that's exactly right. What do you make of energies more exotic energies, you know, beyond, you know, the wind, solar.
You mean like cold fusion Joe cells, those kinds of things. Yeah, they all work. And we now have, that's a new paper I've just written called Muon Catalytic Fusion Processes, colon, with special application to adenosine triphosphate. Here's an example.
That's the ATP thing, yeah.
Cold fusion is where they take and use heavy water or deuterium-rich water across the plasma, and you get a cold fusion result from that of more energy than goes into the system. There are two Chinese fleets of ships that now use it. I have more than 500 different tractors in Middle America, including your state, using water as their primary source of power in a cold fusion process going across the little plasma. It's real simple to do. And they're on the internet, they actually have demonstrations from Utah and MIT where they're actually producing cold fusion processes. There is even some welding application now where you get the flame of the plasma so hot that you can vaporize things like tungsten and other things like that. That was my my undergraduate degree when I was at Pullman. I built the first plasma jet. I built one at WSU and was able to take tungsten and vaporize it one atom thick. Later, that model was used by Giannini to create shuttle tiles for the space thing. But that was something I did as my Bachelor of Science undergraduate thesis. I did an undergraduate thesis.
What's the relevance of being able to do something like that?
You, again, it's making your monoatomic elements with heavy metals. I mean, light metals like titanium.
Mm-hmm.
You can take titanium and spread it one angstrom thick across the surface.
Wow.
You know, using a plasma.
Right.
You have to have certain kinds of plasmas where you pinch them down with magnetic fields,
mm-hmm.
you know, so on. But it creates such a tremendous heat that metals like titanium are vaporized. And, of course, titanium is required in our current aviation to fly faster than the speed of sound. You need something strong and light.
Light.
And there you are, titanium. Mm-hmm. And so that's what allows us to fly at Mach 3 or whatever. Interestingly, I use a jet engine like that as part of my milling process to take the mushrooms, the cordyceps, down into nanometer. We didn't talk about that this night, and that's okay. But I just run the mushroom through a jet engine at Mach 7, and I'm able to shear it down to about 40 nanometers. At 50 nanometer, it's mechanical, it's cheap.
Uh-huh.
And like we would chicken manure or something, the same way. You ran it through a jet engine, and it took the chicken manure and turned it into a powder on the other end. And dried and ready to go with, you know, high mineral.
Uh-huh.
Now, that's how a jet engine works. But what we're doing is a new kind of processing or milling that will allow it takes materials that are not digested or diluted. What is the word I'm looking for? Where you in suspension, it will not dissolve. The mushrooms will not dissolve in either water or oil-based products.
Hmm.
So they're mostly it's fiber, and so it's kind of gritty. If you mix it with milk, you mix it with water, hot tea, it won't go into solution.
It'll
form gum, and you have to eat the gum and the gummy goo because you need the body of the material in your body.
Right.
And so, but at 40 nanometers, 50 is the magic bullet, at 50 nanometers, a product will go into suspension without absorption or dissolving and will not cause the color of the liquid to change. And so they're using that technology in all the Asian Coca-Cola products now because, see, all of Asia knows that the cordyceps is like speed. If you eat this cordyceps, it's giving you a rush because of the oxygen.
Right.
It's not a speed rush. It's an oxygen rush.
Uh-huh.
And so, like breathing oxygen, you got more energy. And so that's why the Chinese use that mushroom to win their things at the Olympics. It was like this miracle food that gives you a burst of oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
It's a food. It's
and they're putting
drug.
It in Coca-Cola products now? Then?
Yeah. Asian took all of them. Coca-Cola, everything, has cordyceps in it. Now, the hybrid at 40 nanometers, so that it holds in suspension, doesn't form a scum at the bottom.
Right.
And it doesn't cloud the change or change the color of the liquid.
But it still holds the properties that it
That's
has.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. And when you drink it, you get a little rush from mm-hmm. it because of the oxygen.
Remarkable.
Yeah, that's the new direction of delivery systems in the pharmaceutical trade will be this idea that, like, head-on, apply directly to the forehead. It,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
let's say you wanted the mushroom at the lungs. You'd lay down on your back, wet the surface of your stomach, and sprinkle the mushroom on it, and it will fall, literally, right through the body and conjoin at the lung. And you have a 100% absorption rather than 38% through the gut, and you have
How is it possible that it falls through the body but doesn't fall through the lungs? In other words,
well,
why
no,
is it
it'll
not fall
through falling? Everything.
Yeah.
But as it's falling through,
it gets picked
absorbed.
Up. Right,
and
right.
So if you do it from the surface of your chest, most of it's going to go to the lung rather than to your toes.
I see.
Okay.
Right,
instead
right.
of going to your toes like it would through the blood.
Right, I get you.
Okay. And so you're delivering it to the lung. Yeah, I'm sorry I didn't make that clear.
No, it's amazing. I mean, it's
remarkable. Yeah, the 40 nanometers is smaller than smoke molecules.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very fine. And what it'll do...
But it's still affected by gravity, too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, everything is affected.
Well, yeah,
by
in other words, but it doesn't float on the wind in the
room.
No.
It doesn't go into water and then go here and there.
Uh-huh.
It falls,
uh-huh.
just like everything
Just like
does.
A ball falls, right?
Well, that's why you're supposed to jog and you're supposed to stand erect, because your bowels and your blood and everything else
mm-hmm.
works better that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's pumps and moving things around. It's all mechanical.
Mm-hmm.
And you use gravity to pack your...
To assist it, right.
Yeah, your lower intestine, just like you use gravity to... Well, I mean, that's how you do it.
Right, right. No, it's...
How you bulk it up, you know, that
mm-hmm.
kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a mechanical way of looking at the body. And people don't even think about it like that, but really, it's basic.
Huh. Yeah, I mean, like you say, it's a
now
physical,
that,
mechanical
looking
process.
Looking at things like that, that's magical thinking, and that's alchemy.
Mm-hmm.
Because the principle, once you understand it in your mind's eye, it doesn't matter how the physics works.
Right.
You've got it.
Mm-hmm. All right, speaking of strange physics and all this stuff, what about nanotechnology and its potential for future energy applications or whatever
Boy,
else?
I saw a good video on that one. There's a new movie out called Subject 2.
Huh.
That's a creepy movie.
Yeah, it sounds kind of creepy.
Yeah, Subject 2, that means there's a Subject 1.
Right.
Okay, this one's called Subject 2, and it's about nanotechnology going horribly wrong for immortality.
Hmm.
And you got to watch it to believe it. And I'm not going to say any more other than it's a great video to show you where the possibilities of nanotechnology and how it could work.
All right, well, we'll take a look at that.
Yeah, it's pretty well done, too. Actually, I was surprised at the quality of the filming of it and so on. It's pretty scary. That's a horror film. It's a Frankenstein-like movie with 20th century, you know, nanotechnology application and showing where it could all go and how it could all be.
Yeah, that's
creepy.
It is creepy. It has both sort of like really demonic and angelic.
Well, there's
you know,
possibilities. You know, it's all the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yeah, all together.
Bayer wrote a good science fiction writer wrote a book called Blood Music, where the blood becomes conscious and decides it wants to talk to God and starts to change its universe so it can communicate to God. Imagine where that could go.
Yeah,
Bayer. He's a pretty good Blood Music. That's a very good science fiction.
Man, amazing title.
Nanotechnology, yeah, right.
All right, we spoke 10 minutes ago about mind control. I want to talk about this in specific. I mean, first of all, how pervasive is it and how...
How pervasive is it?
Yes, but and I know the answer, but I want you to answer it anyway.
Yeah.
But also after that, I want to talk about the level. In other words, the level of control that's being exerted. In other words, how...
Oh, man, if I were to respond to that, the whole idea is not to scare people. I want to leave them feeling empowered.
Well, we got a half hour after this to bring them back.
No. We'll try to wind it up because it's getting late for me, too. I get up real early and do my...
Oh, I know, and you got a lot going on. So.
Well, no, I'm doing pine cones out of the woods right now. I'm doing a truckload every day. Okay. Having to do with mind control.
And why would you be anyone who should be listened to about this subject anyway?
It's, of course, the CIA has remarked that once TV was invented, they didn't need to do any more studies with mind control. I pretty well took care of it. It all started with Travis Stock. And the Travis Stock papers of you know, neurolinguistics and the different concepts of subliminal.
That was an English project, right?
That's correct. Yeah. Yeah, Travis Stock, yeah. Right. Uh-huh. And that's where they do the dripping of the water on your forehead and the blah, 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 you know, the Manchurian Candidate thing. The Travis Stock came out of the original Manchurian Candidate. Now, since then, there's a paper on my website called Synthetic Telepathy in the Early Mind Wars. That's a pretty succinct, lays it out, straight out in terms of what's available off the shelf that anybody can buy. And that's pretty scary because the work I did is more than 30 years old, and yet the first weapon deployed anywhere in any kind of thing, whether it's Branch Davidians, it's Iraq, it's Afghanistan, is called Project Solo. And Project Solo is an airplane with a quantum computation algorithm, set of computers, there's 367 of them or whatever there is, that form this algorithm, and they beam a specific bandwidth of microwave heterodyned with audio on it. And you can hear it inside your head.
And they can direct it to a large area of people or to an individual or what?
Yes.
Or both?
All of the above.
Both and.
Yes. They have now a small horn they can use shooting microwave that causes the heat of your skin to heat up, causing you to disperse in a crowd.
Right. I've read about that.
Well, you know, there's applications all down the line. The mind-reading device that came out of this is that when you're in a beta state or normal conscious state like you are right now, while I'm talking to you, you have a sub-vocalized dialogue going on what you think about what I'm saying. And that can be absolutely measured off the throat using microwaves.
Is that right?
So, yeah, while they're interrogating you, they could have a device trained on your throat translating what you're thinking inside, and they know precisely where you're going with the thoughts.
So now, this whole business about torture and interrogation.
That's 30 years old, by the way.
Right. But there's no reason for it. In other words,
No. They have more sophisticated drugs now. In terms of mind control, subliminal is what most people can relate to. They've gone to another level where there is no awareness, and that's when you get into the nature of free will over true will. Free will means you have awareness and can say yes or no. But what about when you don't have awareness?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Target stores were using synthetic telepathy in their stores last year to inhibit and reduce shoplifting. It was working. And they got called on that, and now Walmart is going to place in the center of each of their stores by the end of this year a big circle in the center of their store called the Center. And if you step voluntarily inside that circle, you can hear the store's sales going on as synthetic telepathy in the inside of your brain. It's voluntary. But once you step inside that circle, you're theirs. And the way that someone put it to me, his brain is mine. I've got him now. Once you're inside the circle, I've got you. You'll do anything I want. In fact, you will. It's worse than subliminals with hypnosis, post-hypnotic. They can talk in a way using virtual audio, so you cannot tell whether or not it's your own voice talking to yourself and making your own decision on something. You know how you talk something over, or whether I should do this or not?
Right.
The little quasi-dialogue that you do that isn't really full sentences but kind of thought forms?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's easily done with synthetic telepathy where you cannot distinguish. Now, what do you think of that one? And then, of course, they have the strobe light like they did in The Men in Black where they put you in a trance state for as long as they want to. And it's not just epileptics that go in. This is for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
A little strobing in your mind short circuits. And while that's short circuited, it's like pig lipping. You can slip commands and that you're not even aware of that you'll follow.
Remember that deal in Japan a few years ago where all the kids freaked out because of some cartoon that was on the...
Yeah, right.
And
that's exactly correct. They encode. What that is N-grams inside and the coding inside the thing. They had Videodrome was about that, you know, with going from the mind of America.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So the television is as nefarious as I imagine that it is.
It is. It is as nefarious as you can get. If you were to Google 2.4 hertz, which is the hum of a TV, that will take you to a Navy patent on mind control. 2.4 hertz. Now, it just goes on and on like that. Mm-hmm. And it's because there are ways in which the brain has stress when it's listening to words. And so if you do wording sequences, you cause the brain to relax, and you can slip commands in, like neurolinguistic.
Mm-hmm,
and so that's what virtual audio is about. It changes. That little clip I sent you, that ought to be a little thing you should just play over the radio for everybody to listen to in stereo with headphones. They would be blown away. And that's just with simple...
Which you've sent me so much stuff. Which clip?
Just today.
Oh,
today there is a 4.5-minute clip called Virtual Audio Demo.
I'll play it next week.
It'll blow you away, buddy.
All right.
It'll blow everybody away.
All right, cool.
I mean, nobody has ever heard the quality of that kind of sound system. Hmm. And that's being used with brain drivers now. I'm going to carry some brain drivers.
You're right. I got the download. I hadn't listened to it yet, but now it was from your brain driver email. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Go for it. Check it out.
You'll
be amazed and confounded, or whatever they call that.
All right. So to sort of close out the whole MK thing, what the hell are people supposed to do? I mean, is knowledge of it enough to be sort of immune to it?
No. And not only no. It's like knowledge of subliminals doesn't mean they're invasive.
Right.
And, you know, signs on the freeway and ads on a bus. And
so literally we're surrounded by it from every angle.
Every single possible moment you're exposed to it. From the moment you wake up.
See, this is why I'm glad that people now know that it's legal to grow psilocybin mushrooms.
Well, that isn't going to save you either.
That ain't gonna
That's like
hurt
trying
you.
To wrap your head in aluminum foil. It's not going to work. Too bad. Really. Nice try.
Well, so what do we do then?
Oh, do. Well.
You know, what to do?
Yeah. Well, actually, I kind of go another step even further by saying that man is in an electromagnetic soup of pollution down here on.
Yeah, oh yeah, it has to be. I mean, it's
we are, and any self-respecting alien that would come down to visit us would have to have an iron lung or aqua lung of some kind. Yeah, there you go. You know,
just to manage in it.
What's that?
Just to manage in the sea of.
Oh
all this
yeah,
stuff.
It's Jethro Tull time. You know,
right.
With aqua lung.
Right.
How do you go down into slumming in four space? Well, NASA has invented. And was in last year's Scientific American, a new kind of skin physics. It's where they take monofilament copper and they weave it into a specific geometry and wrap it in cotton and put that in a spandex-like material that you would stretch over your body. And what it does for astronauts is that it stops gamma rays. Rather than having 10 feet of lead to absorb the gamma ray, this... because of the monofilament copper structuring, causes the gamma ray or the microwave that's coming in these very tight bands, frequency bands, to be reflected.
And disperse or something.
And yes, and so it's like a skin. Now, there's a group in Hawaii called the Resonance Project.
Yeah,
that is trying to,
I've interviewed Nassim.
Okay, yeah, Nassim is I may get to go... work with them for a little bit.
You know, that Elizabeth Rauscher is something else, man. She's cool.
Yeah, she's out of Berkeley. She her physics with Nassim deals with Coriolis forces.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I'm going to suggest that that's higher on the the resolution of the hologram. And really what you want to do is come down to Bremen-Strahlen radiation. Mm-hmm. Look it up. It's muon catalytic fusion process.
Right, this is
that's on Wiki
about.
Now. They've
right.
got me, since I've been talking about it, of course, it's up on Wiki just like everything else. Check out my holographic paradigm. I'm the guy that invented that, too.
That's
it's
right.
all on Wiki. But what I wanted to say is that the muon is one of three basic elementary particles in the lepton series that are like the electron, the muon, and the tau meson. Now, what's kind of cool is that 47 years ago, my junior science fair project, not the senior year when I went to the Nationals with a linear accelerator, but my junior year was called A New Meson Field Theory, which talked about the Mu Meson, which is now no longer called or considered a meson. It's considered an elementary particle or muon. And what it is in your cloud chambers, when you see these particles that go and off in that direction, or they, okay, there's one that goes down into a little spiral. It's like a vortex.
Mm.
That's the muon. And what muons are used for now is to create your tachyons and your neutrinos. And what you do is create a neutrino factory that then is used to measure Cherenkov radiation for water on Mars, things like that. And that was my senior year with Cherenkov radiation. So I've been working with this for 47 years, and finally now I understand how it works in terms of cold fusion processes. The muon comes in, has the same pitch. This is all with Roger Penrose stuff that pitches. The muon goes into a tight vortex that creates a secondary radiation called Bremenstrahlung. It's a weak force radiation that is the deed that causes the plasma and this very special quark gluon plasma, which only occurred in the moment of the Big Bang. You know, all our elementary particles have mutated since the Big Bang. You know, they change because space and time are changing. But at the very moment of the Big Bang, there was this very special kind of plasma, quark gluon. These are bosons. And that plasma is what is occurring, what Kirvan discussed in his biological transmutation, is the plasma that is occurring inside the body. I can prove that now.
Yeah.
And I may be publishing that with Nexus, but it is maybe, it's a semi-technical paper, a lot of math involved, so I may have to, but that's what Nassim and Rauscher should be using, is that field form rather than Coriolis. The whole thing is the same. Like when you have a spinning Earth, the Coriolis forces at the northern latitudes, the water goes down the drain from left to right as opposed to right to left on the southern border. And that has to do with secondary forces when you take a charged particle and you put it into an acceleration or vortex. That's all math from Roger Penrose and his geometric universe.
Well, that is, I'm sure it's above most of our heads, but it's very cool that you're going to be talking with and working with Nassim and
well, yeah, because what we're doing now is what they call skin physics, where the physical structure of the craft creates a resonance that is your space-time generator. And it's a geometric thing in the way it resonates with itself. And that's what the plasma thing is all about as well, you know, the cold fusion things. In other words, with cold fusion is going to open a whole new system of math and physics that's going to allow us to do the next generation of imagination with our mind's eye.
Amazing. All right, look, we got to take one more quick one, okay? And then we'll come back and we'll have about 10 or 15 wrap things up, okay?
Cool.
Great. Thanks, Rick. Back in just a minute, okay?
Yes, sir.
Everybody, Richard Allen Miller on the web at richardallenmiller.com. Wonderful conversation we're having again with Rick. So much coming in that I can barely keep up with it on the website there and an email. But I'll try to get to a few more questions here as we finish things up. In the meantime, got to take a quick break here. This one is from a band that I saw a few weeks ago, actually more like a few months ago, in here in Columbia. They're from D.C., actually, from Washington, D.C., and here's another appropriate tune, both for the conversation and for our happy Independence Day. Exit Clove is the name of the band. This one is called MK Ultra. Back in a minute. This is Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia.
Thank you.
All right, that's Exit Clove. And the song is called MK Ultra. It's Mike Hagan. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, on the web at kopn.org. And my website is MikeHagan, HAGAN.com. And, of course, my guest, who's been with me for the last 2.5 hours, Richard Allen Miller, can be found on the web as well at his website, richardallenmiller.com. All right, Richard, hi.
Hi.
Thank you so much for sticking around all
night
with
us. Oh, it's my pleasure, Mike.
All right.
It's always fun playing with you.
Oh, man, I love it. I love it.
Well, I think it'd be really cool if we could have a big absence ritual out here.
Oh, man, I'm trying to plan a trip out there. And
get you and some of the other friends in from all over the country, and we have a big explosion here like we did at Sisters.
God, I'd love it. There's a whole
Remember the rave they had at Sisters a couple years ago?
No, I don't. What was it?
Oh, there was a great consciousness thing here and all the usual suspects. You know, it was great.
Well, we're going to do it. We had sort of a gathering of sorts at my place about a week ago. And
I know. I wished I could have come to that.
Oh, that was something else. I'll tell you, we had quite a gang here, and I'd love to do it out at your place, too. So.
Well, it's just... doing it together, that's what it's about.
Oh, that's what it is. I mean,
it
really is. And it's remarkable what's happening when
I Canada and do it with Lance.
Oh, he's cool. Yeah. Yeah, there's a bunch of great people that are sort of coming together. I don't know whether it's just in my life or the life of the world.
Well, you're
or whatever,
drawing a lot. You know, you have a very sophisticated listening audience, more than I've experienced with almost all the other radio I've done. And I've done most everything else. You know, Nick tonight was on Norris
on Coast to Coast, yeah.
Yeah, and there's some exciting things happening for Nick now, too. I'm not allowed to talk about him, but watch what happens in the next couple of months.
Right.
It'll be, you'll see.
All right, well, good. Yeah. I'm glad, and I appreciate the compliment, right? I appreciate it.
Oh, you're incredible, Mike. It's that's why I loop you like I do, just to keep you abreast of some of the things I do.
Well, it means a lot to me, and I get a lot out of the stuff that you send me. I'm always I'm jaw dropped more today than I have been in years. I every time I open my email now, and not necessarily just from you, but I can't believe what's happening.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I can believe it, and I love it. But
Kurzweil, singularity.
Yeah. This sort of leads me to a question that I have, and some other people have as well. If the level of control is as great as we suspect that it is, or that you suspect that it is, how are these things, all of these advancements, going to be used in a way that's not going to be, you know, detrimental to the individual like you and me? I mean,
they are, as a matter of fact. And you can't screen. I didn't say this earlier, but I should mention. You know, microwave has wavelengths in the quantum mechanical level. It's almost impossible. It.
Right. I mean, it's
impossible.
Coming through.
We can't do it with a Faraday cage. Just walk right through that. And so, with that said,
how are you and me able to do what we do then?
Well, like I suggested earlier, there might be a hierarchy of controls.
Hmm.
You know, God serving God.
Hmm.
It's like, you know, Dylan. Everybody's got to serve somebody.
Right. Right.
Well,
Dylan
hit it. Dead on in that sentence, you know. I mean, it's that shows that at a certain level of awareness, it's no longer in your control. You have, because you just simply don't have awareness down to that level.
Right.
That's what the response, taking responsibility, is about. Trying to bring your state of consciousness to a finer pitch, so that you have a finer resolution of what is influencing you and how and why.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the most important question is intentionality.
Mm-hmm.
What's the purpose?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Is it to control you? Is it to help you? Is it to what? What's the purpose? And, of course, you know, help can be defined as evil, you know, in some ways, like the Taliban or whatever. Just the metaphors of belief systems and how skewed they can be.
Oh, gosh, yes, yeah. Back to the whole cultural
that's right.
Morass that we find ourselves in.
That's right. And it, I don't see man evolving and would like to think we are, but I am hard-pressed to prove it because I don't see it in evidence to my and around my world. While the only thing I can do is try to advance myself and hope that the world goes with me. That as I change, so changes the world.
Right.
In fact, I almost have to use that as a litany for my current path working because, you know, there's some rules that I follow some of the different schools like Centerpoint and some of the others. I don't like Bill Harris so much, but I like his material, and I think it's very powerful when used correctly. Watch out for Scientologists, that kind of thing. You know? Well, there.
But it's essentially an alchemical point of view that you have then.
Yeah, that's why they call me the modern alchemist. That's the title of the book. That's what I'm trying to do is be some kind of renaissance of moving us to the next level of consciousness. I'd like to see my work used in that regard as you know, a stepping stone for someone in their work to move mankind forward. That's the purpose of my work right now in the non-local mind. The idea that physics is missing a mystery school like the Egyptians used to have. You don't have to know how everything works, even if we're in the 47th century. You know, magic today would be technology tomorrow, but at some level, I'm going to suggest that there are some things that are not knowable by definition.
Yes, you know, Rick, there's this, you know, science looks at the world as if there is no mystery, and that mystery is nothing more than an unsolved problem.
Right.
But I agree. I think that there are mysteries that are
just
mysteries.
Well, that's why I made the distinction earlier about discovery over results and the difference of approach in the sciences between the discovery, the excitement of Eureka, as opposed to where are we going with all of this?
Right.
How are we going to use it?
Right. What sort of toys can we make with it?
Yeah, what kind of weapons? That's the first thing that comes out of anything is defense. That's before anything, it's always weapons.
How are we going to make it over that hurdle without blowing ourselves to smithereens before
this
whole thing?
Well, that's where the Leary neurologic circuits come into play, and we start to identify some other important circuits that also need airtime. If that made time, it made sense. You know, there's besides procreation and survival, there's a whole bunch of other neurologic circuits that have functions and purpose. You know, ego, for example, is not a bad thing. It is a survival tool. And if ego is used correctly, it can save your butt. And that's what I'm trying to suggest is that rather than try to inhibit or limit things, what we need to do is understand them or grok them more in their purpose and use as a tool.
Yeah, raising the level.
I'm just an old magician, though. You know how I am.
Well, I think you hit it on the head, though, because I think awareness and consciousness of the tool will change the way you use it.
I mean, a Ford hammer has its uses, but you're not going to do that to knock out. You use a rubber mallet as opposed to a ball peen hammer. You have different kinds of hammers. You know, they're all used specifically to do things more efficiently than a different kind of hammer. And of course, the Ford hammer is to knock me over the head when I need it big time, you know. I mean, like a truck drive over me or something. Get my attention.
All right, upcoming events. What do you got going on that you want to tell people about?
Well, this summer I'm working all summer at the Brit. I do 30 concerts. Thursday night is Moody Blues.
Oh, that's so cool. I wish I could be there for that.
I know, and then Alison Krauss is...
Speaking of Leary, didn't they write Timothy Leary's Dead, right?
Yeah, well, and Knights in White Satin.
Knights in White Satin.
Yeah. There you go. And we have Katie Lang. Then we have symphony and orchestra, and then we have Martha Graham and things like that. So I'll be doing that all summer down here in Grants Pass.
Is that an outdoor theater?
Yes, it's held outdoors. In fact, when Joan Arbitrating and all the gay women were there this last weekend, there were deer that walked through there.
No way.
No, it was really cool.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was small audiences, you know, maybe 1,200 people.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, small. And
that's
outside,
the way to see.
Under the redwoods, and the music is great. Yeah. And, of course, it's near Ashland, you know, it's in Jacksonville. And it's the only outdoor concert of its kind in the country. You can drink, you can bring your own alcohol and have a picnic, that kind of thing. And I'll be doing that this summer. While I'm finishing the two manuscripts for Nick, I didn't finish, but I was going to say, Inner Traditions wants to do a cornerstone with the Modern Alchemist, and so that's going to be Pantheon and the Holistic Kabbalah, and probably what they're going to do is set up a new section, which is 12 volumes, by the way. They're going to set up a new section called Spiritual Physics. I think that's where the sciences are starting to go, where there's like metaphysics, meta meaning beyond, mm-hmm. where your worldview is broader than, let's say, your application.
Mm-hmm.
The whole concept of discovery, that's what I'm about. I want that place of discovery again, not what we're going to do with it, you know, making weapons.
Yeah.
Well,
me
that's
too.
The
me
difference
too.
Between astral projection and remote viewing. Remote viewing had application like immediate weapons, defense application of spying, whereas astral projection is Shirley MacLaine out on that limb being sawed off while she's letting her vehicle run down the hill being guided by aliens. Well, I thought that was, you know, out on a limb was a great metaphor for Shirley MacLaine. A lot of people, you, everybody, is now, you're all, like what Kurzweil is suggesting, converging into a singularity. There is a beat now to return to metaphysics and these areas of interest. What I did in Sedona with the ESP workshop was to set up a seed for a certification program like we did with hypnosis 15 years ago, where we're going to make ESP, you know, like the American Council of ESPers or Espers, that, well, we rank people so that when they're on a psychic hotline, you know if you're talking to someone that's full of BS or they've been measured as being valid for being beyond statistical inference,
uh-huh.
and they're guessing.
Uh-huh. Remarkable.
Well, that's where I see the future of ESP.
And this work that you're doing at the seminars is helping people or teaching people ways that they can improve that in their own world.
Yeah, and with the idea that what we're going to do is set up a certification program where we measure so-called psychics. And what will happen is there will be discovery of new kinds of ESP that we have no way of measuring.
And some people just have a knack, I guess.
That's right. That, like women... we all have neurotransmitters in our gut,
mm-hmm.
but the women have started where some women have it more like an organized brain section their gut, where intuitions come from, from the gut.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're proving that now with our, you know, what we call functional MRIs and some of these other things watch.
And in the heart, too, you know, they're finding the same thing in the heart.
Neurotransmitters, Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Remarkable. Just like they told us, you know?
Yeah, it's going to be an exciting new century coming up, you know, because the concepts alone are going to be, they're going to be exciting.
They really are.
The possibility.
Well, I tell you, you sort of have been involved in it for almost half a century, and I have a feeling you're going to be involved in it for another half a century.
Yeah, well, if these mushrooms keep
that's
going,
what I'm saying.
Oh, man. I feel great, you know.
Well, you
at
sound
63.
Great, and you're just at the edge of a lot of things, and
it's exciting. I haven't even begun to really write my important stuff.
Mm.
The non-local mind, the ESP, and then the Power Tools book are how to use these different things to power yourself up to the next level, and then the non-local mind will be a real course on magic within the holistic Kabbalah. Starting with Malkuth and working your way up with visualization exercises and other kinds of things that we use in magic to fine-tune our ability to hold or focus on a thought form, make it manifest.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to manifest ourselves out of this radio studio, all right?
My pleasure talking with you today.
It's been great, Rick, and I'll talk to you off the air as always, and from my heart to yours, thank you as always. And I know that
my pleasure. And I'll pick up with you tomorrow after I wake up here.
Sounds great. I'll get this thing up on the web in the next couple of days, and we'll get everyone else to have a chance to hear it. Okay.
Cool. Nice talking to you, Mike.
Take care, Rick. All right.
Yeah.
Bye bye. All right. Bye. All right, everybody. Richard Allen Miller. How about it? Okay. On the web at richardallenmiller.com. Wonderful, wonderful stuff. Just an absolute modern alchemist. Brilliant, brilliant man. And a pleasure and a privilege to have Rick on the program. We'll have him back in the future if he'll be willing to join us again, and I think that he will, and as long as I, you know, mind my P's and Q's with him and all that. At any rate, it's been a wonderful evening tonight. Thanks for joining me and listening to the program. Hope you've enjoyed it. Next week we'll come back with Kent Stedman, my good friend, the bard from cyberspaceorbit.com. We'll talk about who knows what with Kent. You never know. In the meantime, We will play one more song on the way out here from the Mankind Liberation Front. That's the way I'll end my 4th of July special, even though it really wasn't a 4th of July special, but tried to sort of angle it that way with the music at least. At any rate, we've got Ruth in the wing here, going to be coming in, crash landing as it were, playing some music for you for the next couple, 3 hours, and I'll come back and talk to you next week with Kent Stedman from CyberspaceOrbit.com. In the meanwhile, have a wonderful week. Take care of yourselves and take care of your families. And check out Richard Allen Miller on the web at RichardAllenMiller.com. And as I said, you can get this archived broadcast in the next couple of days on my website at MikeHagan.com, H-A-G-A-N. And as always, been a pleasure. It's been Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. This is a song that's called Island, Mankind Liberation Front. Talk to you all next week. I wish I knew.